The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger, as always, joined by Dylan. Hello, Dylan.
Hello, Strigger. I'm very glad to be here. Once again, I always love doing our shows. I always love talking about all of the world of Japanese pro wrestling, which was a very, very busy week this weekend. We got a lot to cover. I think you made a mistake, though. You introduced me. I now have a new name, Strigger. I'm now introduced as Dio Sky. Now that will be my new name on the Eastern Lariat.
You have a new sister suddenly, Dylan.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Or wife, if I was very lucky.
Oh, yeah.
But
reaching out. That's
yes, a very unrealistic storyline, much like the unrealistic names that certain companies come up with for their talent. But no, honestly, I was very happy for her. To get that main roster thing in my home state as well on there. Right in SummerSlam, right in Nashville, like a couple of hours away from me. Yeah, Double J, of course. We cannot forget our good friend Double J, you know. But no, I will not. I will retain my name. I'm not under WWE employee. So they cannot make me change it. But, congratulations to her for her big debut. And congratulations to many people we're going to talk about, because there were some big wins in Japanese wrestling. Multiple big wins, actually, now that we're going to talk about it. Now, some people that have faced maybe some criticism that have risen up. Some people that have faced adversity, risen up. People that have gone on tears through big matches, maybe had success in the past, and now they've risen up once again. And we're going to talk about them all here, and I cannot wait to get into it. Hopefully the fans are into it as well.
Yes, of course. We're going to see who is in the mud and who is out of the mud in this show, I guess.
I know some people that are in the mud, but we will continue.
Yes, excellent. So this show is going to be a nice little sandwich. That's what we talked about off the air when running through the topics. First, we're going to be starting with some tournaments that are going on right now or have finished in case of the 015 Festival, which is going to be the first topic. Then we're going to talk about the TJPW Princess Cup. We've seen the quarterfinals now, and then Dylan will run us through the first days of the 5-star Grand Prix of Stardom. And then we talk about the Dragon Gate Kobe Pro Wrestling weekend. And of course, the double shot that New Japan Pro Wrestling had in the Aichi Prefectural Gymnasium this past weekend. So let us dive right into that, I would say. 0-1. Now, our last show, Dylan, I actually made a mistake because I did not see that Daisuke Sekimoto actually had a Fire Festival match left, which put him in the position to be able to win Block A, which indeed he did. He defeated Chris Weiss and advanced to the final as Block A winner. So 0-1 indeed went with the option to have two outsiders face for the Fire Festival championship. And I guess that tells you a lot about current 0-1, of them opting to do this, of them having Daisuke Sekimoto and Yoshiki Nomura of Pro Wrestling Noah face in the finals. And Daisuke Sekimoto eventually won the Fire Festival sort. 0-1 right now has a roster with, of course, the loss that they've suffered, that is Shinjiro Tani's. There is still no real update for his condition, which we've seen similarities to Yoshihiro Takayama. There also was for a long period no real update on his condition because his condition didn't really improve and he had to work hard and long. So we really don't know what the status of Shinjiro Tani is right now. We're obviously still hoping that he will be able to get back to a position where like Takayama is right now, that he's at least able to move a bit in therapy. So all the best out to Otani. But with the loss of Otani and Masato Tanaka basically doing more work outside of the company than inside, there is just this incredible void of main event talent. They have all these young guys like Tsukutaka Sato, Natsuki Nagao, Takafumi. They have Takumi Baba. But none of them are ready to be in the main event. So in the meantime, they probably felt, and I would have made the same assessment, that they right now need someone from the outside to be in the main event of the Fire Festival. And well, we're going to see Daisuke Sekimoto and Masato Tanaka face once again for the 01 World Championship, Dylan.
That's true. You know, it just, with 01 right now, it's a crazy situation. To me, just considering the circumstances in business, you know, you can definitely make the argument Sekimoto is the right call and the right bet. It's not like anybody would be against him, I would say. But for me, with the circumstances as they are right now, I do think that they should have taken the care to have some, you know, a hero within the company to give the company something to rally behind. And I think that's missing right now in a major, major way. So overall, Sekimoto winning. And I have to say, on a personal level, I will always get behind Sekimoto at 01. That was one of my favorite eras. When I longtime fans know when I first started watching 01 was like my super jam. And he was the champion during a lot of that. Him versus Hikuto Hidaka is like still one of my favorite matches that I have. I still remember that very well. And so I'm cool with this on a personal level. If I ran the company, I would much rather have somebody. And I don't know who that would be exactly, because like you said, there's nobody that's truly ready when you look at a lot of their guys. But if it were me, I would have had somebody that the fans could rally behind. And let's just be honest about it. The company's in pretty dire straits and has been for quite some time, even before everything happened this year. So there, it's such a small point, it might not even really matter, to be honest. So just have Sekimoto in there, get some nostalgia maybe. You might draw some of his fans in there. He still has a name, even though he's not what he once was, but he's still a cool guy and a guy that everybody respects. So, you know, if you're going to do that, it's hard for me to get too upset about it. And he's still a good representative of the company as well.
Yeah, I was surprised. We talked about that on our last show, that they didn't go with Chris Weiss, because that would have been exactly the way that you just laid out. Have a guy from within the company rise to main event positions. And I think Chris Weiss, he has been with 01 for so long, and he has he's always been a guy that was very reliable for them. He has grown incredibly over the last couple of years as a talent as well. I've seen some of his matches in this tournament, and he's really, really good.
Yeah, so he is.
He probably was the choice if there hadn't been Sekimoto. And you always have to consider what the political situation behind all of that is. I mean, Noah probably lent out Inamura with the idea that he'll be at least in the final, maybe even win the tournament. So he won his block without a single loss in there. And Sekimoto also came out the winner of his block. So Big Japan probably had some pull there as well for them to put Sekimoto into this tournament, to have some star power for 01. So you always have to consider that.
Yeah, you know, that could very well be it. If they, you know, you need, if you want Sekimoto in the tournament, he needs to win. You know, so to speak, could be kind of a, maybe, again, we're speculating right now, that may be it. And I get it. You know, again, like I said, it's such at a low point, it's hard for me to really criticize any of their moves, because they're just, they need something just to stay afloat, you know, pretty much.
Yes.
So if they go for that, I totally understand it. I would have gone with someone with the company if it was possible, but they made the decision. Hey, Sekimoto is a bigger name than any of these guys we have. Put him in there. Maybe you could have some good matches and bring something out from the fans that would come to the shows, because that's really more important for them specifically as a company, because their TV deal is non-existent. So they need people to come to their shows.
Well, they actually have one show coming. That is on August 7. That is the Fire Festival final, the yearly 01 taping that we get from Samurai TV. Otherwise, it is really tough as a fan from outside of Japan to follow them. They had the Nico Nico airing, but it was only live. So they've never ever uploaded that, actually. It was the show, I think, on the 8th of July, I think, that went live, but they didn't even go to the length of putting the show up on demand. So that tells you everything you need to know about 01 right now. And yeah, that is basically it. They also announced some names for the Tenkaichi Junior Tournament that will be held, I got the 01 homepage in front of me. That will be starting on September 9 and running all the way through October 19. And they announced three names: the current junior champion, the mysterious Astro Man, he is in the tournament, of course. Then Marvelous Pros, Leo Isaka is in there, who, by the way, also has shown a lot of growth over the last, 2 years, going around all the indies that he can wrestle, because, of course, he's in a company that is based around Yoshi Wrestling and always gets some wrestlers from other companies to wrestle him on these Marvelous shows. And then there is 2AW's Takuro Nikki, as well as Tatsuhiro Takaiwa, who is in the tournament. So those are good names to begin with.
Yeah, and especially like 01's at this weird, you know, they're kind of like the bridge to me they're like the line between the super low indies that nobody really has any inclination to, and bigger companies. And even mm-hmm. though, like, bigger companies in this sense is not actually that bigger, but like that much bigger, but still, I like, they're kind of like the line to me. They're right on the edge of your secret bases and yes. stuff like that. And but they have the history. Like I said, I remember back in those days, 10, 15 years ago, where they were a good company, like things were going on and they were up there with all the rest. But those days are long since passed for all kinds of reasons. But you see things like this, and it's a good spot. Like an Isaka, he's a great young prospect. I really like him. You know, like you said, a lot of growth over the last couple of years. Really been able to get out. He's found common work and great. You know, done some stuff there. You know, and he's a guy that I think you could build, you know, not build around in terms of division, but a guy that you could build up through your tournament. And, you know, someone like Aniki, young talent, you know, they're building around the young talent. Takaiwa has a lot of history in 01. He was originally there, you know, junior ace, you know, around that time, obviously with Otani stepping up to heavyweight when 01 became more of a thing. But you bring him back, get some nostalgia from him, and the rest are all good young talents. So, yeah, like, good four ways to talk. I love, again, this is back to my old days. It's probably not, it might not even be possible to watch a lot of these shows now, unfortunately, but this was, like, my favorite tournament, like, in the old days.
Same, because, yes.
Because the whole purpose of it is the Dragon Balls. Like, and everybody knows, like, Dragon Ball is one of my favorite animes. Like, from Dragon Ball, the original Dragon Ball, to Dragon Ball Z, to, you know, now they have Super. It's still going even today. You know, it's a great show even now. You know, and they would basically, the winner of the tournament would get a wish. And obviously, you would have a lot of the guys who get the wish. And I don't know if they still do this now, but they used to have the actual voice of Shinran from the anime, the Japanese voice, like the dragon that grants the wishes in Dragon Ball. They would have him on the loudspeaker talk to the winner of the tournament, and usually the wish would always be something like, I want a title shot against, you know, the junior champion. But you always point to Wataru Sakata, whose wish was, I yes. want to marry a supermodel. At the end, that was his big wish. And then it happened, like, 5 years later.
They should promote this more. 01 should.
Absolutely, one of the all-time classic moments in Japanese wrestling. Like, for real, like, legit in real life, it totally happened. So the power of Shinran is strong in 01, and I hope they still do that. I think one time somebody said they wanted to rebuild the gardens in the Tokyo Square was one of them a few years ago. So they had a couple, but he was like, also my real wish is I want a title shot. But Sakata, he's the only one that I can remember that had a completely non-wrestling wish, and it also came true, which makes it more special.
Amazing, yes. And, like, one of the best parts about this, most fun parts about this, is everybody getting their Dragon Balls before the tournament, and they usually put some things up on social media, some videos on social media. This time, they announced that Astro Man, he got the Dragon Ball from GM Megumi Kudo, Leo Isaka said he found it while walking around Utsunomiya. That's where they had a show on the 27th or on the 30th. I'm not sure right now. And Takuro Niki got it from the 2AW chairman. While Tatsuya Takaiwa, he said he don't know where he found it. They picked up his social media gimmick of being a heavy drinker, I guess.
Well, let's just hope it's not a shoot. That's all I can say.
Not a shoot. Yes, that's absolutely true. So I'm just looking at the schedule, and right now, 01 has one show scheduled in August where they have a Big Japan 01 crossover show, and then there really is nothing until the start of the Tenkaichi tournament, which is in Shinkiba. So that would be the next logical point to have the 01 world title match. But do you want to do that in Shinkiba? I don't know, but it's 01. Probably they will.
Yeah, they may not. There may be no choice whether yes. to do it.
Yes. Oh man, yeah, that is your 01 Fire Festival update for you. I enjoyed some of the matches in the tournament, so I will say that they, as I said, they have some good young talent, but it's really hard like to see them as any kind of company that as young talent you should really get behind. You know, like these guys like Tsukutaka Sato, he really didn't have a home. And for 01, it's good to pick up these guys, but for these guys, it was probably just the opportunity to land somewhere.
Yeah, somebody like Sato, he's really good. You know, yeah. He's a guy that you could, like, you know, if things were better, you could kind of build around in some sort of way. But right now, it's hard to really, you know, we just don't know what their goals are. They're just trying to make it. You know, yeah. they're not even trying to grow or build up or anything like that. They just need to make it. And who knows what, because in the history of 01, there's been all kinds of behind the scenes craziness, you know, especially with the owners of the companies and the GMs and everybody else behind it. Who knows what's going on behind the scenes when it comes to that. But, you know, I always have an affinity for them, to be honest. No matter what happens with them, who leaves, how small it gets, I will always have a soft spot in my heart for 01. So same. I'm glad we got to talk about it. I haven't seen the final show yet, obviously, but I've seen a good bit of the tournament. I actually reviewed some of them on Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. So, you know, I watched them. Like you said, there were some pretty good matches. There's some good talent, honestly, like up and down when you look at it. And they have a good way to bring in all these people from, like, Big Japan and stuff. So you can get interesting mixes of all kinds of the lower kind of level indies. But not too low where they're completely off the radar, but they're definitely lower than your Noahs or your All Japans or and obviously New Japan. That's silly to even compare them, but they're lower than them, but higher than some others. So I think they're an interesting company, and I still, like I said, I will always have an affinity for them.
Yes. All right, moving on to the next tournament, the TJPW Tokyo Princess Cup 2022. We had the quarterfinals show from the Otemachi Mitsui Hall that has become like the home base for TJPW in the last couple of months. Good-looking venue, actually. And we saw a show that is arguably the best of the tournament so far. We had four matches that I would all classify as at least good. And some of them I really, really loved. So it started out with some fun undercard action. Arisu Endo and Maki Ito defeated Yuria Nagano and Moka Miyamoto, which was a good match with the youngsters, Maki Ito being the veteran here in this opening match. Three-way match, Yuki Kamifuku defeated Haruna Neko and Mitsuki, which also I liked, was a nice three-way match between the three ladies here. Then an all-right six-man tag, Pomaro Jukuraku and Yuki Arai defeated Hyper Misao, Kaya Toribami and Mahiro Kiryu. Once again, Yuki Arai picking up the pinfall with the finally or X-kick version. And then Dylan, it continued on with an incredible upset. I did not read the results before watching the show on demand, so I was rooting for Suzume to win against Rika Tatsume. And when she finally did, I completely went crazy because Suzume, we've said it on our half-year show, she's gotten this new gear. She has this B gimmick. She had this great tag team going with Mei Suruga on the Summer Sun Princess show. A lot of moving parts that are pointing into the direction that Suzume is going to get a push in this company within the next year. So I really loved this match that she had with Rika Tatsume as one of the seniors in the company. 11 minutes, very quick match, high-paced, some great counters by Susume, usual great offense by Rika Tatsume. This was amazing.
Yeah, this match ruled. The first two shows, or first two rounds, I covered again on Patreon. We didn't really talk about it, and I'll tell you, because they weren't that interesting. None of the shows. Like, to me, this isn't arguable. This is by far the best show that they've had in the tournament so far. And they've gotten to the point where they're getting to the nitty-gritty, so to speak, of it. They've had a weird format where people won at first, and then they got it by. And, you know, things were a little crazy going into it. You know, Maki Ito wasn't there at the tournament because she was gone at first. Miyu went to America, you know, right during the tournament she went, and then had to come back, wasted her time there at AEW for a week. And, you know,
I'll say.
Which is, you know, unfortunately, hopefully they do not bring her back again, you know, to put her in lame matches like that, or she should go to indies where she has good matches. That would be much better. But regardless, she was back for this show, and she's back in the tournament. It was very weird. Like, Ito was gone, but she couldn't be in the tournament, but Miyu was then gone, but she was in the tournament. So it's been an up-and-down road to get to this show, to say the least. But this match, of all of them, to me, was such a... I think Rika Tatsume, I think, has to be considered... She's really worked her way up into being one of the top wrestlers in the company, in my opinion. I thought she was, like, completely fantastic in the title match she had versus Shoko. Way outshined Shoko, in my opinion. You know, she looked amazing. That was the show where they allowed the cheering, and she was great at it. And I loved her title reign last year. I thought I always say it got cut short for business reasons to go back to Miyu, I understand. But for me, I was really enjoying what she was doing, and it was nice to have somebody new as champion. And then earlier in the month, she had an amazing title match. And now here, Suzume, you know, and like you said, she's definitely, the signs are pointing to her getting a push in the near future. As a wrestler, you know, like, her match versus Palm got moved to the main event because Mizuki, that's another thing that happened in the tournament. Mizuki had close contact and had to, you know, they forfeited her match or whatever. And who knows how that would have worked out otherwise, but they moved her into the main event, and her match versus Palm was not that great, to be honest. And then this match comes along, and it's like, whoa. Like, I mean, this wasn't even a long match. It was like a 10-minute match, 11-minute match. And it was amazing. Like, I thought it was so good. They had the energy from the crowd. How could you not buy into Suzume as this underdog character versus Tatsumi, who was, again, I think a lot of the focus will be on Suzume, obviously, because she won. But I thought Tatsumi's performance was absolutely phenomenal going in there. And Suzume was, they not only had good wrestling, but the emotional impact of it. This felt like the biggest win of her career, and it was, and they made it feel like it. So everything about this totally worked. I thought this was a great match. My favorite on the show, even more than the main event, actually.
I was just going to say about the main event, because I also thought that the main event had a great deal of emotional attachment to it. Very similar to Suzume and Rika Tatsumi. Obviously, Mio Watanabe is not as much as an underdog as Suzume is, but in the grand scheme of things in TJPW, of course, facing the champion she is, because she has never been to that level. And after the match, she said that, "I strongly felt I had to surpass my seniors this summer. It was meaningful because I was able to beat Mrs. Nakajima, who I respect so much. I don't know who I'll face in the semifinals yet, but I want to surpass my seniors, who are the signboard of Tokyo Women's Pro Wrestling." So that's what she said afterwards. And that's basically what we talked about a lot this year, about these new talents, like surpassing the talent that has always been in the main event. And we saw two wins here with Suzume and Mio Watanabe defeating the seniors. And I really, really liked the main event as well. Thought it was a great, great match. I loved the way that Mio Watanabe incorporated her power into this match. And also she was dreading some parts of the match where she wasn't able to put away Shoko Nakajima finally. But when in the end she did, she was so emotional. And I loved that part as well. So main event also very good. And these two moving on is great.
But yeah, the main event was good too. I do think it was worked at a, you know, an interest, like a more of a slower pace. I think there were more.
Yeah, it was more about the power of Watanabe that had to be displayed.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't think Shoko was going to advance personally. Obviously, it is an upset, like somewhat, you know, obviously because it's a big win, biggest of her career. But, you know, it's Suzume's upset actually made a lot of sense too, because Tatsumi actually had the title shot earlier in the month. So it's not like it was completely crazy. Like, you know, no, nobody could have expected it. Seeing it happen, to see Suzume, somebody who has not been, you know, any kind of push commodity, get the win, I think they were able to work that. And I think I like Tatsumi more than Shoko as well. I thought her performance was better.
Agreed.
You know, Shoko is a fine champion. Nothing wrong with her. But I just think Tatsumi is she's in a zone right now. Like, one of the best going. Miyu's a great performer. She was the one I pegged to win the tournament as well. I think she was my pick after Mizuki, you know, went down, unfortunately, with the close contact. And I think they've set that up very well. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. You know, you get a good... you know, a good range of finalists here. You know, you have the two. You know, I like Watanabe. Obviously, she has the daydream stuff. She's been a person in the company. Suzume, I think, would be at a lower level than her. You know, and you know, obviously, you have the up girl stuff too with Miyu, so she's always got some kind of spotlight. But you get two younger talent, newer talent, people who haven't been main eventers, and then Sakazaki and Yamashita, who are like the cornerstones of the company, having long title reigns in the not distant past. So you get a good mix of people here into the semifinals, which I greatly appreciated.
Yes. The other
and the main event was a very good match, too. I have to say, I wanted to just reconfirm that it was a very good match. Both of them were worth watching.
Exactly. Like the other two matches, I thought were good. It's always good to see Nao Kakuta in a singles match role. She had a good match against Miyu Yamashita. Kakuta attacked Yamashita from the get-go, but Yamashita was able to get back in the groove and finally finish her off in under 10 minutes. The third one I thought was very interesting because it was the exact opposite of Suzume and Miyu Watanabe, because in this match they made it abundantly clear that Yuka Sakazaki is a much better wrestler right now than Hikari Noah, because she was able to defeat her very definitively. Was an interesting approach, I thought.
Yeah, you know, these two matches, they were okay. Like, I mean, I liked them well enough. You know, I didn't think they were terrible or anything like that. You know, and I thought, like you said, the Sakazaki and Noah match, I thought was pretty interesting. You know, it didn't have the emotion of the main match or the Suzume match, obviously. And, you know, Noah lost at the end. And Noah's been in a real funk, I think, for a while now, you know, in my opinion. I think she hasn't been able to grasp, because when she was on the come up, she was like the one that I thought was the best of all the up girls. I was like, yeah, Noah, she's going to be something in the company. And then, you know, she got the title, and that title reign really didn't work out too well. And it feels like she's never really gotten back to what I expected of her, or lived up to her expectations or her potential. And here she got to the quarterfinals, lost to Sakazaki, like you said, very definitive win for Yuka. And, you know, I didn't think too much of it negatively or positively. It was a solid match, and it you know, if they go somewhere with it, that's fine. But to me, Noah, you know, she's at a real crossroads right now in her career.
Yeah.
Wondering where she goes from here.
I feel like they gave her this big match opportunity against Hikaru Shida a couple of months ago, and that it was actually a very similar match to the Sakazaki match, where it never, in one moment of the match, looked like that she was on the same level as either Hikaru Shida or Yuka Sakazaki. So, yeah, the crossroads definitely there. Is she going to be something or not? That definitely will be shown in the next coming months. So.
A lot of the cage match ratings were interesting. A lot of people really hated this match, I think, for a lot of the reasons.
Yeah, I guess about. So. Yeah.
Yeah, you got 1, 2, and 3 ratings mm-hmm. you know, up and down there. And it's like, you know, it wasn't a 1. Like, 1, I think, is very dramatic.
It is.
Even 2 and a 3. But, you know, I don't know. It didn't feel like this was some blatant burial. It was just like...
No.
You know, like you said, that
it's
they...
It's very obvious that they... These two matches that I mentioned, it was very, very obvious that Hikari Noah was nowhere on the level of these other two.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, I mean, And like, these are big stars, like much bigger stars than Noah. So it's not like I said, it's not like, to me, I didn't consider this an egregious burial. Like, let's
put me neither. But you would think after that title run that she got, but of course that didn't go that well, but you would think that she had grown past the level of just being cannon fodder to these other wrestlers.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, she didn't come across like a star when they gave her the chance. So it's hard for me to, like, you know, have too bad of a feelings about it. Like, to me, she doesn't stand out the way, like, Watanabe does right now. So, if you know, if it came down to it, or, like, Suzume in that match had all the emotion and stuff, and who knows how that'll go. We don't know the future, obviously. We've seen stuff come time and time again. And perhaps, hey, like, they could turn this into something for her at the end of the day. Like, say, look, you've gotten these big matches and have not delivered. You didn't even come close to winning, really. And that could be a sign of a change for her as a character, give her something different to do and open up a new path for her, you know. And I think that you could do that. And I mean, like, look, we're going to talk about somebody in Dragon Gate who had a title reign that was, you know, solid, iffy, not that great. And he had a new, you know, change of heart and a change of gimmick. And it just meant the world to him, and he's at a totally different level now than he ever would have been without it. So perhaps Noah can get a change too and unlock that side of herself, because I always saw a lot of potential in her, but I just don't think she's reached it. Not just the booking, I don't think even her has been that great, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree with that. So looking at the semifinal card that we have for August 13, finals obviously on the day later, there's some non-tournament action with Arisu Endo wrestling Mei Suruga, and then Pom Harajuku faces Max the Impaler, poor Pom. For the semifinals, we have Mio Yamashita versus Mio Watanabe, and Yuka Sakazaki versus Suzume. Both very interesting matches, we said it, with Sakazaki looking strong against Hikari Noah, and Suzume being the clear underdog in this one, and Mio Yamashita against Mio Watanabe. Not as clear of an underdog role as Suzume, you said it, but still, though, you would expect from given the history of successes in TJPW, you would go with Yuka Sakazaki versus Mio Yamashita, but that would also be the most boring pairing you could.
The history of successes, but not in the tournament for Miyu. Mm-hmm. Her gimmick is that she's always struggled in this particular tournament, and this is her biggest run to date in it. So, you know, an upset is always very possible at the point for Miyu. But like you said, just in terms of star power, they're the biggest ones. But Yamashita herself has taken early losses repeatedly in the tournament, and now she's getting her way to this big spot now. So it's going to be interesting. I think that alone gives her a little bit of a storyline, you know, that reason to win, not just because Watanabe, like you mentioned, her promo afterwards, going over the veterans. I mean, they set up that story very well if they wanted to, with Shoko, Miyu, and then Sakazaki. Like, back to back to back would definitely envision, like, you know, her living up to those words. But Miyu, with her story going through the tournament, that can lead her to go either way. But for me, we have to remember that she's never had a lot of success in the Princess Cup.
Yeah. I would still go with Miyu Watanabe, actually. Miyu Watanabe winning over Yuka Sakazaki in the finals would be awesome.
Yeah,
that would be a great elevation for her. And, I mean, Suzume has had great success over Rika Tatsumi now, and probably could, like, lose without losing anything here. Big match for her, so that's what I would do.
Yeah, Suzume's not beating Sakazaki. Like, she got her big win and has been successfully elevated if they want to go forward into that situation. Sakazaki is a better opponent. It would be more meaningful to beat her in the finals than Suzume ending her run. And especially if it was Miyu or Watanabe, you would have to... That would, like, mess up the dynamics of what you would want. Either way. Because, like, people would probably... Like, Suzume is a much bigger underdog than Watanabe, so you don't want to risk, you know, the fans going for her over Watanabe. So I do think... I definitely think Watanabe will win and beat Sakazaki in the finals. So they set it up, and it'll be interesting if that happens and what they do with it going forward.
Yes, exactly. So that is the one Yoshi tournament going on at the moment. And then, Dylan, it has begun. The biggest tournament of the year actually has started. Stardom's 5-star Grand Prix has started out with a show in Ota Ward on the On the 30th, right? Not on the 31st, on the 30th, the first show.
Yeah, that was night one.
Yep. Right, that was night one. So I have not seen that yet, but you have. You have also, I think, reviewed this on the Patreon already.
I have not, but I will.
You will. Okay, you will very soon. But so we'll get the hot takes right here. So Dylan, please take us through the tournament matches that we've seen on these first 2 days in Oda City General Gymnasium.
Yeah, first night was, you know, they started off, you know, an interesting showing for everybody on the first night. You look at it, you go to Oda City. The first match of the tournament was Mai Sakurai and Momokogo. Sakurai definitely on a hot stretch right now. Both these two had big matches in the past month with Kogo's high-speed title match, which I thought was a fantastic performance, and by her included. Then you have Sakurai. She had her flexing her deathmatch muscles in the tag match as well. Her hardcore, I guess, would be more accurate style. You know, teaming with Julia versus Suzu and Risa Serra on that crazy show they had, the Stardom Showcase show. But it was very well received. The match was solid, okay. Two young wrestlers, about 5 minutes. You know, they didn't get it a big stretch, but Sakurai got the win. That was the main point of it. Ami Sorei got the win over Saya Ida as well. That was, again, a very quick match. Two younger talents. Big upset to start with Sarai. Saki Unagi Sayaka. Lackluster match, in my opinion. They went a little longer than the first two. Definitely, none of these are worth, you know, rushing out for. The show steps up after the first three, in my opinion. But you had, you know, of the first three, they were all pretty average. I guess I would say the opener would be my favorite, but none of them were super great. Then you had the first big match, which was Micah versus Risa Serra. I think Micah is really, really good. I've always really liked her. I think she's somebody who is set to take a big step forward in terms of what she brings to the table. Risa Serra, a longtime defender of Risa Serra's, all the way back to her Ice Cross Infinity Championship days. She was a great champion then and still a very good performer now. And they had a really good match, I thought. Again, very quick. A lot of these matches, you're not going to be sitting down for 30-minute epics in this tournament. You know,
yeah.
You're like the highest, I mean, the longest match was a tag match, but the longest tournament match was 12 minutes and 51 seconds, according to Cage Match. So that shows you where we're at here. But that was a very good match. All of the other, like these last five matches, I would recommend all of them. To me, the next match was my favorite, very slightly over the main event. Shuri versus Azumi, again, very fast match. I love the chemistry these two have because Shuri is obviously the world champion and Azumi is the high-speed ace. And so you bring Azumi's style into Shuri's style, and they just meld so well together. They're just so talented. These two are my two favorite wrestlers in Stardom, and they always prove it. Like why they are when they wrestle each other. So that was a really strong match, I thought, even just under 10 minutes. I think any fan can enjoy this match.
Yeah, second highest rating on that show, actually.
Yeah.
2.13.
Yeah, it was my favorite, but I mean, it's a toss up between that and the main event, in my opinion. And the tag match as well. I think the tag match is underrated on Cage Match, actually. Kairi Anane Takahashi versus Lady C and Saya Kamatani, Tall Saya. This was to set up two title matches, Kairi facing Tall Saya, and Anane getting a red belt shot versus Shuri. And I thought this was a really, really strong match. I've been really high. I think me and the inmates always disagree on the Kairi tags, because I think they're at a really great level. And then, you know, the inmates, they never quite give them the love that I think they get. I love the performance of, you know, Tall Saya, obviously, as well. I thought Lady C was very good. This is one of her best performances of her entire career here against Kairi. I think Kairi is clearly one of the top wrestlers already in Stardom. And I'm so happy to see her, you know, do more stuff. And I think, you know, spoiler alert, she would even surpass it on the next night. But they had that match versus Amasaki and Hayashishida in May, which I thought was a great match, too. I really loved that match. I thought it was really good, right on the level of the main event. And Shuri and Azumi, Kairi and Nane looked great. Great tag team. They had the cool entrance, you know, coming out on the motorcycle. Kairi fist bumped Mayu. It was awesome. I love it. And then, of course, my main event, Mirai haters forever in the mud once again, as Mirai scores back-to-back huge wins opening the tournament. They're baffled. They're mystified. They don't understand why it's happening. Their world is crumbling down. But Mirai does nothing but have success and have great matches. Because once again, and who else? Iwatani, the security blanket all of wrestling when you think about it. Much like Tanahashi in New Japan, she's not only the company representative, but has the best wrestling mind of everyone, as she continues to get the best out of all of her opponents, including Mirai, who is a wonderful talent, regardless of anyone who discredits her. I thought they took a lot, and this was a heavy-hitting match, too, like in terms of just people going at it, like back and forth, fire-ups, you know, strong strikes and stuff like that. This might have been the match you want to look for out of all of them. So I love that match. Mirai scored the win. Great moment. Big win from Mirai. Well deserved. Similar main event, Himeka versus Utami. This was a very good match again. I think of the five, it was probably the one that stood out the least, in my opinion. But it was still a very good match. Would be, you know, a very, like in the G1, this would be a top-tier match, probably. But like these two put together a really good performance. Obviously, you have the power game of Himeka. Utami coming out back with the long hair, which I highly approve of. You know, long hair enthusiasts unite right now, and Utami is back in the club somehow, and you know, probably with extensions, to be honest, unless she has some kind of secret hair growth method, that, because, you know, her hair was short not that long ago, so how did it get so long all of a sudden? What is her secret, I wonder? But as a wrestler, no one will know her secrets because she's just too damn good at this wrestling game. And she continued to do great. Himeka was very good as well. You know, she's a fine talent. Not my favorite, honestly, in the company, but still very good. And they had a good power matchup here. And Himeka got the win, as you would expect in the early going. You know, they want to set up some upsets here and there. And then the main event, Hazuki defeating Julia in another great match. I thought right on par with the tag match and the Azumi and Shuri match. At one point, you see Julia do a shoot headbutt to the post, wow. The steel post, which was incredible and incredibly dangerous. But it's Julia, so she can do whatever the hell she wants because she's one of the best wrestlers. Amazing star power throughout. Hazuki definitely on the level here between with Julia. Again, very hard-hitting match. And then they turned up the pace for the closing stretch where it's like, you had this match, the table was set. And then they put this five-course buffet in the last couple of minutes where they had this amazing closing stretch at the end. And then Hazuki hitting the big brainbuster to set things up. I predicted this as well because I think Julia is the favorite to win the tournament. So they would want to have some adversity for her early on. And by God, they had it in this heavy-hitting match. Again, much like the Mirai and Mayu match, the strong strikes, the pace, everything about it was good. I thought it was a better overall match. And again, a legit great match. I would put the tag, Shuri and Azumi, and the main event as legit great matches. And Mirai, Mayu, and Himeka and Utami are still recommended and worth watching. So a great first night. One of the best shows, in all honesty, that I can remember of the entire year. Because they also, again, set up the title matches. I cannot wait to see Takahashi take on Shuri. That's going to be an amazing match. You have the long-term storyline of Takahashi being the original, you know, red belt champion against the current one. Kairi, amazing wrestler. I hope she wins the title. I hope she wins all the titles in Stardom and every company. You know, I love it. Just a great, great first night. And anybody who was down on Stardom watching that show, it's impossible because it was just an amazing, amazing show. Different level than anything we've seen at any of the other tournaments so far. The second night, you had Koguma versus Kogo. Koguma got the win. Lots of fun here. Not a great wrestling match, but tons of fun. The personality was off the charts for Koguma. Bear pose supremacy is definitely in heavy effect right now in her block. Shirakawa faced Momo, both of their first matches, and that was a good match as well. Shirakawa very improved up and down over the last year or two. She came in so from Tokyo Joshi Pro and has really grown into a very good performer. And Watanabe, obviously, everyone loves her. And so they had a really good match, and Momo looked great, although she did take the fall, which I know probably made some people mad. Big Momo fans out there. Risa Sera versus Saki, that was a solid match. I didn't think it was great, probably the least match of the show. But there was still some good stuff to be had of it. Saki's had an interesting run so far in Stardom. Not really been on the top level just because the talent level is so high. I think she's going to not be able to stand out in a lot of ways against some of these others. But it was an okay match. Not as good as Risa's first match on the first show. Then you have the tag, Kairi and Natsupoi versus Iwatani and Sayahida. I thought this was equally as good as the first match. And, you know, you could argue surpassed. I actually think I liked the first match a little better, but this was a very good match too. Putting over Natsupoi, they have a long-term history with Natsupoi taking Kairi's old attire, and they played off of that. Iwatani and Kairi obviously are very well linked, so a very good match there that everybody should watch. Ida did not look out of place with everybody else either, so we have to give them props. Tam Nakano versus Himeka, Tom's first match, gets her first win. Interesting match, again, the power game versus Himeka, and Nakano was doing her fiery underdog stuff in the match, and it was very good, very well done. Not special, I would say. You know, not as good as it could have been. Himeka, you know, so-so in her first two matches, but still a fine match here, nothing wrong with it. Mirai versus Julia. Mirai haters permanently in the mud once again, as Mirai gets a win over Julia. And this was a great match. Not as good as the Mayu match, in my opinion. Like, the whole show was not as good as the first night. But still, this was a very good match. And Julia going down 0-2 here. And it seems like they've taken a page from some New Japan booking in their tournaments. The problem is that there are so many matches that even 0-2, it's like a you know, it's making a dent in your run. It's not putting you in a hole right now, so because the blocks are so big. But Sima Maid, Starlight Kid versus Talsaya, both first matches in the tournament. Starlight Kid got the win, and that sets up some good stuff in the future. Starlight Kid is going to be an amazing prospect, as always. You know, their last singles match was better than this, I would say. Again, that's the problem with a lot of these matches. Like, just if you judge it in a vacuum, this show was as good as any show outside of the first show, but it's just the first show was so great that the second one couldn't live up to it. The main event was Utami Hayashishita versus Shuri, which is the one match that did like match it up to it. That's the must-watch match of night two, and I thought, again, a great match. Again, you're always going to compare it to that first match, and also the title win, which I thought was an amazing match, very underrated in my opinion. It was not on the level of that, but I think it was as good or better than their match last year in the tournament as well. You know, at least as good, maybe not even better, but still, you know, their shortest match so far, just under 15 minutes. Utami gets the win. Utami looking strong coming into the tournament, as she should. Shuri taking a loss here, even as champion, sets up some doubt against Takahashi coming forward. I think they've done a great job with Shuri as champion. I know a lot of people maybe aren't as into her title reign, but I am. I think it's been underrated personally, and I think they continue to do good. So that's the match of night two that is must watch. But I would say Mirai and Julia was the second best match, and the tag as well were up there. Starlight and Talsaya was definitely worth watching, and Shirakawa and Momo as well. Like, all of those were recommended, at least, and the main event was a legit great match, and the tag is right up there as well. So a lot of good stuff from Stardom in the first two nights of the tournament. Would highly recommend. The first night is, to me, one of the best shows of the year, and set up many great things going forward. So I loved it. Second night was very good, but not as good as the first night.
Sounds great, actually. I gotta get into that, definitely, from the reviews that you gave of some of those matches. And in the middle of this tournament, actually, they are having these title matches that you just mentioned. So they are going to the Dolphins Arena, where New Japan just has been for the G1 on August 21st with four title matches. Artist of Stardom, title on the line, Momo Watanabe, Starlight Kid, and Saki Kashima, Wedo Tai. Defend against the Cosmic Angels of Mina Shirakawa, Sayaka, Unagi, and Saki. Cosmic Angels / Saki. Goddesses of Stardom title, Hazuki and Kuruma defend against Tamnaka no and Natsupoi. New formed tag team, of course, after their feud that they had that concluded. Then Wonder of Stardom title, Sayaka Mitari defends against Kairi, and Shuri defends the World of Stardom title against Nanae Takahashi. Really, really lauded show.
Do you want to talk about the IWGP title here, or in the New Japan segment?
Well, what do you have to say about the IWGP heavyweight title? We've not talked about that, actually.
The women's title.
Oh, the women's title. Yes, we can talk about it here, of course.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I was thinking, what does Jay White have to do with this?
I would never bring up Jay White.
We can, of course, talk about it here, right?
Yes. So, if you didn't know, New Japan announced that they're going to have a women's title now, the IWGP women's title. As they said, they set it up. Basically, it's going to be for Japan and America. We could probably expect it to be on the big shows, your Wrestle Kingdoms,
yes,
so on and so forth, and, you know, the King of Pro Wrestling, blah, blah, blah. And the first champion is going to be crowned in the main event of the New Japan and Stardom co-promoted show in November, which is interesting. This is something, you know, it's been talked about many, many times for New Japan to have a women's title or a division or whatever.
That is not. We have to make this perfectly clear. There is no New Japan Women's Division. That is not happening.
You know, I have a lot of thoughts about this because a lot of people were excited about this, and to me, not happening for now. But to me, my reaction to this was not positive. I don't think they should do this. Like for stardom's sake, in my opinion, because New Japan. Here's the thing. How, you know, it's not like, and I did a whole show on this on the Patreon. I said a lot of this. So I'll give you the streamlined version. It's not like New Japan just woke up one day, you know, and said, we didn't want to do this all these years before, but now we want to do it.
I've retweeted a tweet of mine from 2019 where I translated an article that was about this topic, and Rossi Ogawa back then, 2019, already talked about the possibility of an IWGP Women's Championship, and they've done it now.
Yes, but my point is not for Rossi. I'm talking about New Japan people. Like, they did not, like, if they wanted to do it before, it would have happened before, you know, at the end of the day. They didn't just magically come to this conclusion.
No, that's what I'm saying, that they didn't magically come to this conclusion. That's exactly the point that I'm making.
Yes, so the point I'm making is that there's some people that are probably not happy about this on the New Japan side. And I have a feeling it's not a coincidence that, you know, listen, this company, New Japan, like Bushiroad perspective, okay, presidents, bigwigs, Stardom has been a better investment since they bought it, since New Japan.
Yes.
They've been much more successful. Their growth has been significantly more, whereas New Japan has not grown.
And you can see it from the comments that were made. We talked about some of them in one of our prior shows, that the wrestlers have not been happy about the comments that the president made about them.
Yes, and that's where I'm going with this. Like, you know, it's not a coincidence that all of this bad stuff is happening in New Japan, and now they have it. Like, if everything was peaches and cream in New Japan, this title would not exist in all likelihood.
I get it.
Okay. Like, they he wants this because Stardom is popular and good and growing. All the things that New Japan is not doing right now. That's not going to make people happy on the New Japan side. Like, there's going to be people that are not happy with this, especially in Japan, a company that has some questionable business practices when it comes to women and how they look at them. And it's not fair and it's not right, but this is going to be an ego shot for some people that they've brought this title on. And what's going to happen if the Stardom match steals the show? What if happens if the Stardom match is the most over match of the show? What happens if the Stardom match is a semi-main event at a big show? Because that their titles, Stardom's champions, their company, their titles all mean something for the company for the most part. New Japan's titles don't mean anything except for one title. You know,
that is one point I made about this. So when the news broke that morning, that Friday morning it was, I said I didn't have a real strong opinion either way because I just want to see how this all plays out. The one thing is, this is another championship for two companies that have too many titles to begin with. You've made the exact point that Stardom's championships, they mean something, while in New Japan Pro Wrestling, there's a lot of titles that just have names. Like, take the U.S. title. It's the U.S. title, but it's not defended in the U.S. at all. So it doesn't really mean anything there. And now you have this new championship coming into this promotion for the women. And it could take like main event or semi-main event positions, and it could take away from some of the male talent, which could lead to some problems, as you said. And then again, it is an IWGP Women's Championship. So what it means will be seen, but just slapping the IWGP banner onto a championship definitely means something in the world of Japanese pro wrestling, because it's really not that common that a male quote-unquote board of directors for a championship, they all have this fictional board, have women's titles. So this means something for Yoshi Wrestling, but then again it remains to be seen what it really does mean in practice.
I can't see this being a good thing for Stardom, to be honest with you. I don't think New Japan, like, there's no need for this, like, to meddle in women's companies. And like I said, to me, this reeks of a company that's very much there's unhappiness, and particularly among the people that run these companies that see how that New Japan's not successful as it once was. And this is trying to leech off of to Stardom's popularity, and they're trying to get something more for their stale and terrible company, that their idea to get more fans is to do the same stuff they've always done and push foreigners nobody cares about and storylines that don't make sense and aren't over, with a lot of heat, brother, as they say. You know, their idea is doing that, and that's never worked, and it's probably not going to work this time. So now they're trying to go into other situations, and what's to stop the president from saying, again, we don't know how they look at this. Is that success going to be looked at as a bad thing because it's women and not men? We don't know their point of view on this, where we know that nobody knows that. So to me, who's to say that they don't want to have much more of a Stardom presence and have a much more of a merged show presence from these two companies? Nobody knows that at the end of the day. And also another thing, I have a good feeling that people in Stardom are thinking the same stuff I am. If you look at the tweet introducing this from the Stardom account, the first thing they said was, this title does not supersede the red belt and the white belt.
Mm-hmm.
And my point of that is, if that's true, why did you say it? Why did you say that right away? If that's true, why did you say that? So to me, that tells me that they're already thinking and worrying about the same stuff that I am. And that's, to me, is very concerning, in my opinion, because I don't want to see the Joshi scene get disrupted by whatever interests are behind this and whatever reasons they have for it. And it's very concerning to me that they would do this. And hopefully it's nothing. Hopefully it's just something for American shows. You know, they mentioned that a few months ago, somebody said. It might have been even that interview, but he was like, you know, we want to keep up with the global standard of, you know, have women on our shows. That means we have women's matches. But to me, it's just, it worries me. And maybe, again, it's possible even that my vision is outdated, just as a longtime fan. Maybe it is time for there to be men's and women's companies in Japan's. You know, nobody can say that for sure, but I don't want it to be that way. Like, you know,
the thing about it, if New Japan was a company like, say, we've talked about 01, they have a very small roster. If New Japan was a company that had a very small roster, you could, from one day to another, decide, okay, we are having women on our cards. Look at All Japan Pro Wrestling, for example. They have a very small roster, and they have decided to take up training women to debut them eventually. They've not made clear what exactly they are going to do, but they've taken the first steps there. But New Japan is a company that, like you said, they heavily rely on foreigners. There's a big portion of foreigners on their roster, and then there's the homegrown New Japan talent that also takes up a lot of chunk on the roster. And where would the women find a place in that roster? That I think would be very, very difficult and would cause even more disruption.
Yeah, and inevitably the balance of power one way or the other is going to get thrown off kilter through politics, as with every company that this comes in. You know, All Japan, they've actually had women's matches for years. Mm-hmm. Just randomly, not like a division or anything, but just bring in like a special tag match. Oh, here's Sariano or something. You know, we've seen that.
Yeah, when Muto was there, they did it, and Wrestle One did it too when he was.
Yeah, not even just Muto, but even like when Akiyama was president, they had it in, you know, 2000, mid 2010s and stuff like that. You know, like they kept that going, and obviously, yeah, Wrestle One, like they tried to have a women's division. It wasn't very well done, to be honest. But you know, like they had some good talent there. Obviously, the few they did have, but. You know, for a company like this, where you're talking about an entire Joshi promotion owned by the same company as the top men's promotion, it's a little bit worrying. And like I said, that tweet by the Stardom account basically confirmed all of my fears. And it makes me think that they're probably thinking about that too. And I'm like I said, I have a good feeling people on the New Japan side are probably not going to be happy with this if they're not already unhappy. And if they're not unhappy for all these other reasons that we talked about already. So it's going to be interesting. Hopefully, the best case scenario to me is this title, you know, when they have, like I said, when they have the Wrestle Kingdoms and the big shows, you have a spot for that. But how much will that even mean, you know, at the end of the day? Because remember when they had the Ring of Honor special matches, like the title matches on there? Right. Is that how they're going to handle them? Or are they going to make it a big deal? Because these Stardom wrestlers are much more important than Ring of Honor wrestlers to Japanese fans. There's no question about that. So how are they going to handle it? What's going to, and like I said, what's going to happen if the the company decides, and they hear the fan support, and they realize, hey, this match is more important than the junior title because we haven't booked it well in 25 years. So that, like, now the fans care more about this women's match than your junior title match. How is that going to go over? Who's going to be behind it? Who's going to try and put a stop to it? It just feels like a disaster waiting to happen to intermingle these companies like this. But hopefully it just leads to nothing. Like I said, hopefully there is no women's division truly in New Japan. And hopefully it's just for big shows and maybe some American shows. But I worry about it. My initial reaction was not positive. And like I said, maybe it's possible my way is the old way and is the wrong way to, you know, demand that they be separate. But that's how it's always been. And then you see the American way, the quote-unquote global standard. Well, guess what? Those global standards really suck with the women's division. Look at the AEW division. It's a complete joke. And that's something that doesn't need to be existing, like in a New Japan setting, compared to a Stardom, which is an amazing company with lots of great talent. You know, and then what's going to happen? What kind of domino, you know, if that happens, what's going to happen to the other companies? Because we've seen multiple times, look at these other companies. We've seen examples of these companies following New Japan's, you know, suit in many ways.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Like, will Noah or DDT all of a sudden come to the conclusion that they now, like, do a cyber fight women's championship and have the TJPW talent fight for it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, at DDT, it doesn't matter. Like I said, they have intergender stuff like already, and they have people there. Noah, you know, that's an interesting point. Well, you know, like I said, these companies follow along and do their thing. Who knows? This is a domino that could cause a major, major shift in the Joshi scene. It should not be undersold. I think a lot of people...
Yeah, it's true, true.
We're looking at it at a very base, like... basic way of looking at it, like, oh, the women's title, huh? Like, her, we've been talking about this women's division for all these years, ha, 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 very funny. You know, like, this should not be undersold, in my opinion, because it could be a major thing.
I think the first sign of where this will all go will be what position the match will be at Wrestle Kingdom. And I guess from there on, we can see how this all will go on. So that I can definitely share and understand your worries about it, because it definitely can disrupt the scene. And then again, it also provides a great opportunity for some wrestlers to jump on this stage that I would say that they've never been onto yet, because of course Stardom has gained a lot of interest in the recent years, but nothing compared to New Japan on an international scale.
That's a great point as well. And like I said, if this is just for the international scene, then that's okay. Like if it's purely for the Western fans, then that's totally okay. That's the main goal. And who's to say, like I said, there could be politics behind the scenes that even if it becomes a big deal, they may try to purposely keep it down anyway and put it in that second match spot or something like that, just because, like, they don't want it, you know, at the end of the day. So we have to think about that as well. We'll have to see how it turns out, like I said. And like you said, you know, if it's just for the Western fans and maybe you get a big spot on a big show, maybe it's a contractual thing. Maybe they're thinking Stardom may have some kind of TV deal now or in the future. We saw it in the first couple of years where they couldn't show their matches, right? When they were on Wrestle Kingdom, they couldn't air it. Now you could say, look, this is not a Stardom match. This is a New Japan match with the IWGP title. Like, could, you know, that could, and if it's just that, that's okay too. Like, but we don't know is all I'm saying. We have to consider every possibility. And it rubs me the wrong way with the men's company and the women's company in Japan intermingling, because I don't want it to ruin all of the amazing women's companies that we have or change them to the point of unrecognizability and make it like it is in America. Obviously, that's a fear that you could have. So, yeah, my opinion was negative. Maybe I'm overdramatic and maybe my ways are outdated. I can admit that. But hopefully we can see it. Maybe I'm right. And it doesn't need to be that way, but hopefully everything works out okay for the Joshi companies, most importantly.
Right. So yeah, we've seen some issues that you're seeing there for the future with this deal of the IWGP Women's Championship, and I guess this is the right moment to transition to another company where we've seen issues over the last couple of weeks compared to what we've seen in the months before, because dating back to our half-year awards show, we were really high on Dragon Gate. That was in early July we did the show, Now, right after that, they had this Kurikan Hall show where they had the no contest in the main event between Kai and Shuji Kondo. And now we had the double shot in Kobe World. The first day was labeled the Ultimo Dragon 35th anniversary show. While at the point, he wasn't the only one who had an anniversary match on that show, but of course the longest tenure and the biggest star probably, with Dragon Kid and Kagetora also having their anniversary matches on that show. And also the day after, we had the original Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival show. So this year they chose that way. And yeah, we were really down on the cards, and we weren't the only ones that were down on the cards. On the Open the Voice Gate show, they also didn't really go out of their way to praise that show, to say the least. And well, these two shows, Dylan, I watched them. I sat down. I watched the first show live. I caught up with the second show before the recording. I watched the remaining undercard matches I hadn't seen yet. And just from the business side of that, it seems like that the audience also agreed with us, because these attendances in comparison to the years before, they didn't look good. So in comparison, last year for the first show, they did 2,396 fans. And this first show in Kobe World did just under 2,000 fans with 1,915. And the second show, of course, last year had the big retirement of Masato Yoshino. So it's partly unfair to compare it to that, but that had 3,580. And this second show at least did better than the first show of this year with 2,515 fans coming out for the second day. But overall, this feeling I have of these two shows was that there hardly was a point on both nights, and there were a lot of matches, there hardly was a point where these shows felt like the biggest show of the year. And Kobe World always has this special aura to it, where Dragon Gate goes onto this big stage in their home base and has an amazing crowd at their hands. But this time it felt like it was just a show. And you could see it from the crowd reactions as well. Of course, they are still very limited with a clapping audience. But it didn't feel like that the crowd was into a lot that was presented to them. And for some portions of these cards, it's just because there is talent on these cards that don't mean a lot to the Dragon Gate audience. Like, for example, Masato Tanaka or even Elio Del Santo. They don't mean anything to these audiences. And we've talked about it off the air that Open the Voice Gate also made the point in their preview. And so the reactions to that was not good. And overall, the feeling that I just shared is I'm kind of disappointed with these shows, even though just from the pure wrestling, these shows weren't bad. But there was not the feeling of this being the biggest show of the year.
First of all, I want to praise that Open the Voice Gate preview. Not just them saying this. This was Jay, the commentator, who had an amazingly honest interview on there. Absolutely fantastic. One of the best I've heard, honestly, from any kind of commentator of any company. I thought he was absolutely excellent and made those points about, you know, he was being very honest about it. Like, people like Tanaka and Iono Santo, they don't matter to the modern Dragon Gate fans. And I think people always have a struggle with that sometimes, that the Dragon Gate fan base is very insular. Like, you know, Dragon Gate fans are Dragon Gate fans, not necessarily the same fans that are fighting over New Japan and, you know, and all of that stuff. You know, a lot of the companies have, and it seems like that's actually growing, especially on the Western side. I made this point before, that's unthinkable 10 years ago, that somebody would only watch one Japanese company if you were a fan of it. But now I think there are a lot of people that will pick their favorites and stick with that. And it seems like that way is going in Japan as well. And obviously Dragon Gate is one of those companies. For the show, I mean, to me, there was just a lot of filler on the show. I mean, even these anniversary matches, you know, Ultimo was the big one, but you also had the Kagetora one. You know, you had the Dragon Kid. Like, those were just filler matches at the end of the day. You know, and then you had, obviously, they set up a big angle for Nosawa in the Ultimo match. You know, Nosawa and Eita coming in. interfering nonsense, pretty much at there.
Dylan, I gotta intervene here because this portion of these two shows, how can they think that this is something that their fan base wants to see? All this shenanigan, bullshit, count out, no contest stuff with Nosawa and Los Perros del Mal de Japón coming in. Who wants to see that from a Dragon Gate fan perspective? And I don't want to see that. So this portion of the show that clearly had a lot of fingerprints of Nosawa behind it. And we've seen it on some of the reports that have come out recently that there is a lot of blame for Nosawa once again. And it's always funny to me when we talk about that. We've been over that with Noah as well. But it's not like, and you've made this point before as well, Dylan, it's not like everybody all of a sudden stops thinking and just goes, oh, yeah, if Nosawa says this, this is probably what we should do. No, they could just say, no, we are not doing this bullshit. But they are.
Yeah, it's not like he runs in with a knife at everyone and is like, exactly. Look, you have to do this. Like, no, like no, nobody has to do anything at the end of the day. Like, why do they have to do what Nosawa wants?
Not all of a sudden some mindless robots that will just function the way that Nosawa wants them to.
Yeah, exactly. And look who was on the card as well. As I predicted, Keiji Muto was the special guest of the Stalker Ishikawa.
Wait right there. Wait right there. You predicted that the great Muta would be on the card.
They're the same person.
No, they are not, Dylan.
I'm just
saying, I think they did that. I think they don't want to, quote-unquote, waste a great Muta appearance. Because I think that the great Muta... The thinking behind that is that he will just appear one more time, and then it's gone. I think they'll promote a big show with a great Muta appearance, and otherwise it's going to be Keiji Muto.
I really don't think it matters to anyone except Keiji Muto, to be honest. Like,
but,
you know,
that may be, but that's the thinking, I guess.
I don't think it matters at all. Like, to be honest, like he's Keiji Muto.
I don't disagree, but
He's Keiji Muto. He came in. And, you know, he's still the same person, like whatever you want to call him. And what a surprise. Like, you know, on the same show where Nosawa and all
this. I'm just taking this W away from you, Dylan. That's all I'm about you right now.
And you're wasting everyone's time just like Keiji Muto did in his match against Dogger Ishikawa. Because it doesn't matter. None of this matters. And the whole undercard, it's not just those matches. None of these matches matter. At the end of the day, like, name me one undercard match. The only one with stakes on it was the Brave Gate match. And that, I mean, that was a solid match. Not bad.
No, it was solid. The Brave Gate match on the second night, I thought, was much better than this.
I agree with you on that. Yeah, like, you know, me
so
and
we had with Hio going over Dragon Daya in 14 minutes, rating of 6.5. So pretty much in the range that I would give it. Except for that, you're totally right here. None of these undercut matches mattered in any way. Not even the matches that came after that. I mean, those were the anniversary matches. They were fine and good, but nothing that stood out.
Hey, I have a question. Why do you think the Brave Gate was so early on the card?
They They always do that on these cards. We've even seen cards in years prior where the Brave Gate match was the opening match on these big shows.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a good point.
On the second night, it was much, much higher on the card.
Which it should have been on this one as well. Maybe on some of those other shows, you had big matches like to bring in or things that they treated as important.
But even at the Triangle Gate match on this card, this also was just a complete Perros de Mal match that didn't have any meaning, really. The Ultimo Dragon versus El Hijo del Santo match, they did some stuff that they thought that they could still do. Was fine for what it was, but then there was this no contest bullshit thing. So,
Now to be fair about that, that's clearly a direct callback to M2K from 20 years ago. Like, their whole gimmick was that they wanted to ruin the shows by having bad matches countouts. So it's like, again, that's more nostalgia. I wonder how much that means to a lot of the... I mean, like, you know, a lot of people that have gone through the history of Toriumon and all that stuff, that's cool, and they've done a great job of doing that. And I like that they, you know, they lean into their history a lot, actually. I just wonder this particular thing, which is meant to be bad, but also now they're kind of like good guys, like in this new role, feuding against heel Paris Del Mal. I just don't think it was really a good. It just wasn't a good setup for all of this, but it is kind of cool. The whole purpose of this group is to put over Mochizuki Jr. On there, which is, by the way, another good Jay mentioned on that interview, is an amazing story about Ultimo Dragon and his, what they did on the Toriumon anniversary show. A very amazing story. I won't reveal it here, but it has to do with Mochizuki Jr. It's very, very funny. But the whole point of this group is to put him over pretty much and have the, you know, his dad, Susumu, amazing wrestlers. Maybe they're going to downgrade Susumu in a similar way to Masaki in the company right now, which is a shame because he's awesome. But, you know, I think the whole purpose of that was to put over them. And they're just going for nostalgia with the M2K stuff, which they did 20 years ago. And now they're doing it again in 2022.
Yeah. Yes, they are going back to that.
You don't sound too excited about it.
No. No, I'm not, actually.
Fair.
I mean, just for the points that you just made, I mean, downgrade these. Just, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, Dylan, we had this one shining light on these two shows, which was the Open the Twin Gate Championship. And pretty much exactly what I said before happened in this match. It was the best match on either show. And the Kung Fu Masters, Jackie Punky Kamai and Jason Lee, they defeated Diamante and Shun Skywalker, which ended up being a perfect match for these four wrestlers. I want to put over how amazing Diamante and Shun Skywalker looked in their gear. I want to put over how incredible Diamante was as a base for especially Jackie, and Shun Skywalker being this like dominant heel, big heel in comparison to someone like Jason Lee tossing these guys around. Just was an incredible match story. And this finish with Jackie Funky Kamai repeatedly getting out of Shun Skywalker's SSW finisher. This is a move that he has been putting away guys left and right. And not only that, Jackie also kicked out of the of the moonsault double knee drop that Skywalker does, where Jackie had been pinned a couple of weeks ago, I think in Kobe it was. So he countered this SSW repeatedly with going around Skywalker and then hitting his Project A finisher, while at the same time also kicking out Diamante. This match ruled, Dylan.
This was a fantastic match. I mean, like, the difference between this and everything that came before it was galaxies. like, you know, literally. I mean, this to me is, this will probably be the best tag match of the year, in Japan at least. I would say I can't think of anything that beat it. You know, I know a lot of people point to the Astronauts and Strong BJ, but I think this beat it. Honestly, like I just in terms of the emotion of it all, the amazing win of the, you know, the Kung Fu Masters getting the win here was so cool. And it's like I loved it because the psychology of it was so basic, but done in this amazing Dragon Gate crazy way. Like, you know, the big heels versus the fiery, smaller baby faces. A tale as old as time in wrestling. And yet they did it in such an amazing way. Even in just how they moved around the ring. You had the greatest hot tag of all time, where they did the lucha spot of Jackie. You know, I think Shun, or maybe Diamante, but one of them, he jumped on their shoulders. He lifted them
Diamante.
Up. Yeah, Diamante. He lifted them up, and he dove halfway across the ring, like, it looked like he was 20 feet in the air, how high he got on this lift. He dove across to make the big tag, and it was awesome. Like the best hot tag of all time. Then, like you said, the finishing stretch was amazing. They put over Jackie. And hey, I think we all talk about the young guys in Dragon Gate, the youth movement. I think we need to, you know, obviously Yoshioka, this was his show. You know, this was his night, his weekend. But I think we have to put JFK up there with all of these other guys like SBK and so on and so forth that are future stars. I think this guy needs to be listed right among all of them because he is a fantastic talent, so charismatic. Jason Lee, to me, is among the best juniors in anywhere in Japan. Shun is among the best wrestlers anywhere in Japan, to me. Like, just not just wrestling, but his character is so amazing that it complements his wrestling so well. He, to me, is among the best talents anywhere. One of the strongest competitors. Jason right up there with him as an underdog, as a junior heavyweight. And then Jackie on the come up. Diamante, one of the best bassists in Japan, perfect for Dragon Gate, plays his role so well. Everything about this was amazing. Like, definitely, like, by far and away, the best match of these two shows.
Let me read what Case Lowe wrote about Jackie on his review of the show. He first says that Jackie Fangikawai feels like the embodiment of what Dragon Gate is all about, and also says that Kama is Dragon Gate's new energizer buddy. He's the kind of face you want showing up in tiny towns and on massive stages. He's the perfect underdog babyface who can sell and sell and sell and still somehow survive. And that is exactly what he is.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I think he's awesome. Great person in his role. And I think it's especially big for these two to win the titles. And I'll tell you why. Earlier in the year, I thought, and obviously it had to be how it had to be because of where they were going. But I really think, especially at the time, and maybe now you could argue it a little more considering where they went, but I thought the Courage had an amazing run in them, and then they cut it short. You know, I thought they were super over, really amazing talents, like the fans loved them. They felt like they were going to be a main event player as a tag team, and they cut it short. This team with Shun and Diamante has been very good as well. You know, great heel team, done a lot of big things. But again, not a spectacular reign, you know, like an epic reign. I like compared to like Jason and Minoru, to me, I thought was a great tag title reign that lasted a longer time. I think these two could have that level and even surpass it, like Jason and JFK. If they have a long reign, 8 to 10 months, bangers every month, like they're going to be up there as one of the most popular tag teams and one of the best tag teams. And I think that was a great thing that they wanted. I hope they can give them a big title reign rather than shift the titles again in another three months or so.
What I find extremely cool about this team is that this gimmick that they have, the Kung Fu Masters, is straightly for matches in Kobe. And otherwise, they will be natural vibes. So this act will be very interesting to follow and will always like kind of change a bit considering in what role they are going to be.
I will forever be on the team of the Kung Fu Masters. Forget natural vibes. Like, stick with this Kung Fu gimmick forever.
I love the theme that they have. It's just so, it goes into your head right away.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I totally agree with that. You know, hey, there's something I wanted to mention. I asked this to Yannick on the Patreon, but I'm bringing it up to you now. Why do you think, like, how does Noah get away with all this stuff with the theme songs? Because remember, they muted the Paris theme on this show, but on Noah, it's not. And they played Final Countdown. So how are they getting away with this?
I have no idea, actually. I've wondered that as well, because for a brief moment, I thought that they were going to play both Masato Tanaka and Ultimo Dragon's theme. They did for a couple of seconds, but then they just stopped. I don't know. I would assume that there is some guideline from the parent company that they can follow. Maybe it's just a question of buying the rights to these songs. Maybe there's more money behind Noah where they can just say, okay, we just buy the rights to Final Countdown, where Dragon Gate says, who the hell cares if this is on our streaming service or not? Maybe well, that's just it.
But I mean the theme music is a big deal, to be fair.
It totally is a big deal, and I was about to tweet that, but then I figured it's not worth the hassle because it's always been that way with Japanese streaming services, but especially for a big show like this, not being able to hear these theme songs as you watch along, it takes away much of the show.
You know, you especially, like I said, just to see how Noah does it. Like you said, would they really pay all that money for Final Countdown? Maybe they did. Maybe Abima was just like, screw it. Like, you know, for we don't know this. We can only speculate on that. And the Peros theme, does Nosawa own the trademark to Peros del Monte Japón? Do they get the theme?
I don't rule out anything for Japanese Jeff Jarrett right now.
Okay. All right. No, like I said, I mean, that says it all. But anyway, one negative thing I will say about the tag match. The one thing is, I wish that they had not announced Shun was going away before the match, because that kind of made it obvious that they were going to lose. And I thought there was doubt in there before that announcement, you know, that you could go either way. But I mean, like, the match was so good, it didn't really matter. But I just, going in, I was thinking, oh, well, I guess they're going to lose the titles. They run pretty much here. And what a shame losing him will be for Dragon Gate as well, for any amount of time. So hopefully he comes back safe and sound and is back to do great things. Along with Yamato and is SBK leaving too?
SBK is leaving too, which also made the second night Brave Gate title match very clear that he would be losing that. He could have taken it to the US too. And it looks like he will be going on an excursion to Mexico and the U.S. Yeah, he's been losing a lot recently. Felt a little off of what his initial push was. So they are sending him away for now to hopefully return because he was very promising. He caught on with the fans, I thought. Had a great gimmick, great look. But I thought also, now we're talking about him, I thought that Hio's look also improved vastly over the last couple of months. Not only his wrestling, I thought, improved, but also his entire look and his entire approach to his wrestling improved a lot. And I gotta say, I really, really, really enjoyed this Brave Gate title match that him and SB Kento had. I thought they brought a lot into this match. Hio's wrestling has been getting so, so good over the last couple of months. I really think that he deserves this run, and I hope it's going to be a long one.
He's a guy that's really stepped up over the past couple of months. You know, I think he's definitely improved. Like you said, the look, his wrestling as well. You know, I like him. He deserves it because he has taken the time to improve and worked hard. If it were up to me, I think there's other guys I would have at this spot, honestly, over him. You know, you see somebody like a Ben K floundering on the undercards, you know, doing nothing. And like Dragon Dai, I mean, this guy was the hottest guy. Again, just like I was saying, DeCourage, he was like the hottest star of the year at the start of the year. And now he's like in this totally nothing roles on both shows. It's crazy.
He's skateboarding with Don Fuji. That is his role.
And which I enjoy.
It is an amazing act, yes.
Yeah, yeah, like, in fairness, yes, that was cool. But you know, you see him, like, he should be in the semi-main event level type of guy. Not, you know, third match in and, you know, 10th from the top or 8th from the top or whatever in one show and then the opener. And like, it's like, what? Like, this guy was, like, he could have been your guy. Mm-hmm. And so for some reason, he's dropped off. Just like SBK, he's another one. Last year, to me, he was the true protagonist of Dragon Gate last year. Like, the one who had all of the cool stuff going on. All, like, his promos were amazing. A very intriguing player. He had the... Wasn't he Brave Gate champion last year?
He was.
Yeah, that's
what I thought. He was Brave Gate champion until January. He was beaten by Dragon Dire.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. He had this a great Brave Gate run. And then somehow, like, at the start of the year, something happened. Some switch got flipped, where he just wasn't doing what he was doing, and I feel like he's lost motivation, like, as time has gone along, but he showed. Like you said, I think his match was a lot better than Dia's match for the Brave Gate. Those were both, I mean, that was a really solid match, a good match as well. Hio, like I said, he deserves it. I like him, but I, you know, there's others I would have had, but, you know, I'm not against it either, giving him a chance, and he's improved. He deserves a lot of credit. And that's pretty cool that he got the title. Like you said, hopefully he has a good run with it. We'll see what happens going forward. But yeah, you know.
Another one that is kind of going nowhere right now, also of this generation of guys, basically, is Madoka Kikuta after his return.
Yeah.
He had the 6-man tag on the first show, and then on the second one he teamed with Takashi Yoshida, of all people. On the first day, actually, he teamed with him as well. So, yeah, Madoka Kikuta, he had this Dreamgate title match last year where he got injured. After his return, he was aligned with DeCourage, with Dragon Dire, and with Yuki Yoshioka. Didn't get a role for this show. Going to be interesting to see where he goes from now. But for now, it feels like there is a lot of steam that was lost by these young guys that had a big push last year and early this year. The one exception for that, Dylan, is Yuki Yoshioka, who won the main event against Kai, much like we predicted, and also defended against Kota Minura, also as we predicted. What do you think about this match against Kai?
Match was good. The problem is all the stuff that came before it, building it up, that really took away any interest that anybody could have. Like, if they had just went right from him winning the King of Gate to this match, I think it would have came across a lot better, in my opinion, than what they actually ended up doing. But as a match, Like, both matches to me were honestly of similar quality. One was...
I like this one better.
Which one? The Kai match?
The Kai match, yes.
I can get behind that. Here's where I'm coming from that. I think the Kai match was a better match, so to speak. You know, it had everything. It had all of the ingredients for this to be a great deal, pretty much. Kai was a great heel champion. Has been built up all throughout the year. Has done great things. Feels like the final boss. And they worked the match how they should have. A very good traditional pro wrestling main event, mm-hmm. you know, passing the torch style of match. You know, it had everything. Kai was in control for a lot of it, but Yoshioka had an amazing fire up. He had everything and wrapped up, honestly, that closing stretch. Like, he wrapped up the entire story of Dragon Gate throughout the year, in my opinion, because he used the Darkness Buster that had been passed along to him by Kness, remember?
He also in the second match with Kota Minoura, used some of the moves that he used while he was still, what was his name?
Dia
Inferno. He went back to both of these strings that he has been aligned with, both with Kness and with being the Dia Inferno guy. So I thought that both of his approaches were very interesting. I thought also, like you said, Kai was a great final boss in this match. Thought that he played his role very well. One thing I can't get behind in these matches oftentimes is the repetitiveness of the moves, because Kai, I mean, he has the Meteor Impact, and then he has the Meteor Impact Kai, which is a slightly different version of this move, and he did them a lot in this match. At one point he did 2 Meteor Impacts in a row, and that takes away some impact from the eventual finish then when you go for it. But other than that, I thought that the match was good.
Yeah, you know, that led to a great moment where Yoshioka kicked out for the Meteor Impact at 1. I thought it was very well done, and it led into the second one, like you said. I thought the finish was awesome. He hit the Mad Splash like halfway across the ring. Yeah. He took a huge leap to get it. I thought it was a great looking Frog Splash to win. That had all of the ingredients. You know, like, it had all the parts of a great match and a great passing of the torch and a great moment. It just felt wrong because of how we've gotten here. And the fans clearly agreed, because they were not into anything on either of these shows, to be honest. Like, this was not an epic... You could say what you want about the clap crowd. Watch this show and watch that first Stardom show and tell me there's no difference in the crowd.
Yeah, like, exactly. And, like, compare this to prior crowning moments when we thought we had the next guy. Compare this to when Benkei defeated Pac. When Benkei defeated Pac felt much, much bigger. But look where Benkei is now. And to be quite honest, I thought back to that and I had some worries about that here as well, because we've clearly been there with Benkei and we've said it. He was the guy back then and they put all the steam behind him and suddenly he wasn't the guy anymore. How will they treat him right now, being the champion in the situation where the fans just don't care about the title change? Will they give him the chance, or will they back away from him?
Well, like I said, I see a lot in him. I think he is an amazing talent.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I had said it even when he unmasked that he was the guy. Like, I think he would overtake Dragon Dia. I think a lot of people were on Dia's train, and he's a great talent, too, obviously. But I predicted him to win King of Gate, and he did it. They had a great story of the team. And Dia had been the main guy for the first half of the year, and then Yoshioka, you know, rose up above him at the end. Like I said, everything that went into it just hurt everything, and the crowd was not with it. You know, that other one, like you said, Benkei, that felt like a big deal, but, you know, they had other plans. That was right when they started to do the Toriumon and Dragon Gate and the Red, you know, the intergeneration factions. So they took the title off of him for that. He's never recovered. You know, let's just be honest. Like, he's never recovered, and you can only hope. And I think, like, that would have been Shun Skywalker's fate if he had never changed. Like, if he had stayed as a babyface, he'd pretty much be where Benkei is right now. Like, a guy that they just forgot of, like, they got lost in the wind, so to speak, you know, as a babyface. And his change, and I hope that Benkei gets that change at some point. I doubt he'll be as good as Shun has been, but he's a guy that he desperately needs to change, in my opinion, going forward. But Yoshioka, I think he has everything it takes on his own. And I liked, like, the second night's main event was okay. It was good. I liked it. I think that might have been here's where I was going to go with my original point. Like, the first night was a great traditional match. The second night main event was a better Dragon Gate match because they worked it at a much faster speed with Midnora. So he was on top doing a lot more stuff than they could just, you know, packing in a lot more stuff into his match than Kai was. And it ended. I mean, it was and also I think here's the thing. I had no doubt that Kai was not going to win that match going into it. Like, I would have been stunned if Kai had won. The second match had been so, like, they've been so weird about how this has happened. Like, you know, and Nora should not have even been there. I think most would agree, but he was there anyway for whatever reason. And they even made a point on commentary like that. Look, this guy, he has been given everything. Like, he doesn't deserve this. Like, why was he inserted into this? They were saying that, like, their whole commentary was saying, like, look, this guy is not a credible challenger. And to go that far, like he's been and not even that, he's been gifted shots that he doesn't deserve repeatedly. And like, that's a very harmful, like, reputation you could have on a wrestler. So I think it's very interesting that they went there. I could have bought Minoru winning, and it would have been terrible, and I would have been on here complaining about it if it had happened. But I could have bought that a lot more than Kai winning and then facing Minoru. Like, I thought there was no way that could happen. And Minoru, I could at least buy a little bit more. So I thought of quality. And here's the thing. They were both, to me, recommended matches. They hit the baseline, but they were missing something to be truly great main events, in my opinion. Both of them.
Mm. I agree as well. I had a problem with the second night main event because, once again, there was a lot of repetitiveness. Kota Minoura tried to hold down Yuki Yoshioka for lots of parts in this match, and there were a lot of elbow exchanges where the crowd just was not into it and didn't react to any of them. And there was a lot of Yuki Yoshioka trying to get back into the match. When he eventually did, the match got to the pace that you mentioned, but there was a lot of that lacking. And
they
I don't know.
Anything
on
these
two shows. That's true. That's true. And and then you can't really work a match like that where you based around the crowd having to react to that. So that took away from it for me.
Good point.
And then again, I don't know if Yuki Yoshioka's role right now is very suiting for him, because it feels like he is much better in a babyface role than in this role that he had to play now.
You're talking about Minoru.
Yeah, about Minoru, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not catching on in any way or shape or form. And they've also flipped the switch for his gold class group. They have also changed. And it feels like Naoki Doi isn't there for any of it because he just goes through the motions right now, basically. He's not showing any kind of charisma that he usually has in this group, so this all feels really, really weird and off.
Oh, I totally agree. I think, you know, we were talking about the young guys and the class and the talent and all that, and that's great. The talent level is super high. You know, I wonder if a certain someone had seen some writings on the wall of what's to come, and he decided to take his ball and get the hell out of there. It could have what had been happening.
Yes.
Because that person was also not getting booked the way he used to be either. So you have to wonder, what's going on with these factions right now? What is... Okay, so Z-Bratz is going to be in a tough spot without Shun, in my opinion. Kai, not with the title now. What is Z-Bratz? Like, when you think about it.
I don't know. I expected some kind of angle on the second night. I was thinking that the Hio versus SB Kento match would be a perfect match to grab an angle and ride SB Kento, for example, out of Dragon Gate for now by throwing him out of Z-Bratz. That I thought, but they have this Kurken Hall show coming up this week, so they usually do the angles there, and I guess they wanted to go and do these shows and then probably start their new stories. So that's happening on Kurken. I'm expecting a big angle for that. So Z-Bratz probably going to, they pretty much have to add a member, I think, with the loss of SB Kento and Shun Skywalker right now.
I had a fantasy booking idea. I started the Patreon. I'm going to run by you for purely entertainment purposes, and I'll see what you think of this. Maybe the listeners can see what they think of it. So they run a match. It's high-end versus gold class at some point. the two lamest factions that you could have, the worst groups. So basically, they run a match, and then Zebrats all run in. Like, they could make up any reason for it. Kai is pissed about losing the title, whatever, and he's going to wreak havoc on everything, and they're all going to wreak havoc. And then they look like they're about to square off with everybody, but then suddenly BB Hulk and Kai get beaten down by Zebrats and Gold Class.
Ooh.
And then they look like they're going to turn to High End, and suddenly Ben K also turns on High End.
Ooh.
And they're all together. They've reunited the factions. Now Minora and Ben K are the leaders.
I love it.
Yes, exactly. And like Minora is like the lead dude. Yeah, like it kicks Kai and Hulk. It kicks all the old guys out, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so all of the rest, like Kai, Hulk, BB, or excuse me, Yamato and Doi. Because remember, we saw Yamato and BB Hulk team on this very show. So bring them all together, and you can throw in Kai as that group.
Team veteran returns.
Yes, exactly. Like some sort of deal like that. You know, a new version, Dragon Kid's there, and you have the young. You know, and we've seen this kind of feud a million times in Dragon Gate. The young guys versus the old guys. You know, like we've seen that a zillion times. But do a new spin on it now, based around Minora on one end, and you can pick whoever you want on the other end, whether it's Doi, Yokai, Yamato, whatever. Like, you know, bring all those guys in, and you can have some friction when SVK and Shun return. Like, well, you know, will they be down with this new version of Zebrats, or will they have some loyalty to the old guys? So, like, I think you could do a lot there. That's my fantasy booking idea. Get rid of High End and Gold Class forever, and never to be mentioned again. Rejuvenate Zebrats, because now Shun's going to be gone. Get rid of the old guys, and now you've given them a purpose other than this kind of thrown together random group built around Minora and Ben K. And that's my idea.
I would absolutely love that, because right now I don't see any role for High End. We've said it before. High End just feels like a complete lame duck group. They don't have any purpose right now, and killing them off would probably be the way to go. And the direction that you laid out, I love it. I completely love it.
And the sad thing is, High End, all of the wrestlers are great in the group.
Yeah.
It's just, as a group, this is terrible. And like, so, like you said,
it doesn't feel like any one of them has anything in common.
Yeah, and it's like a go-nowhere group. There's nothing to latch onto as a fan. There's no purpose behind them. Yeah. So I would get rid of Gold Class and High End. I think Vibes should stay. Like, they're a very successful group, obviously. And one we talked about it off the air, the one that nobody thought would last is the one that's actually the one that's the strongest. And switch things around. You can move, you can shuffle the deck on a fourth group however you want to do it. Maybe, yeah, well, I mean, you still have M3K as their own group as well.
Sure.
You know, so you know, you have some parts laying around and stuff that you could do some big things with in the future. So that's my idea, and I think that would be a good way to move forward. Because I do think that there needs to be some big changes. And they planted the seeds. We saw the turn. Remember, the one match they had, who was it? Like, in the second night. Kagetora came out to second somebody, but Ben K wasn't there. Like, you know, he stayed back. I forget who it was, what match that was. But it was only one of them came out to support him. And I was like, oh, okay, they're planting seeds here. And none of them actually bloomed on this Kobe World weekend. So hopefully, like you said, they have something big planned for the Korakuen show, set the stage for the rest of the year, and maybe give Yoshioka somebody. I think they could do well to add some people to Decourage as well. You know, like you said, maybe Kakuta, you know, he's a little bit lost right now. Throw in some people. But, I mean, they're losing people. Ishida lost, left. You have Shun, SVK, Yamato leaving.
Case Kakuta is nowhere to be seen.
Who?
Exactly.
And Fujiwara, he's not been around either.
He's like, in he's Mexico.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's been missed, though, like, since he left. You know, like, these guys are big losses. Like, you're losing some of your most entertaining people right now, and people with potential, and even veterans. So it's like, a lot feels like it's up in the air in the company, and I don't want to complete. I mean, these shows were not successful Kobe Worlds, in my opinion.
No.
Like, ultimately. But I want to see where they're going, at least before I completely bury everything about this company and turn on it, because they have a track record of the last year and a half of being a very well-run company and a very good company to watch. So I want to see what their plans are before I completely bury
definitely
it.
Giving them the benefit of the doubt exactly for that reason. So that there's going to be I'm going to watch this Korakuen Hall show with a lot of interest. Right now, only announced that Elio Del Santo will be competing on that show once again. And there is a singles match announced between Mochizuki Jr. and Ishii Nihashi. It could be very good, actually.
Definitely, I'm a big fan of Ihashi. Shout out to him and his brother as well. You know, Mochizuki Jr., a very cool deal to see him as a champion, and I'm sure they have big plans for him as well. So that should be a lot of fun to see that match.
Absolutely. Yeah, all right. That, I guess, wraps up our talking points about Dragon Gate, Dylan. And we're moving on to our final topic for today's show, which is the double shot that New Japan Pro Wrestling ran in Aichi, day 8 and 9 for the G1 Climax 32. And usually we would say this is the halfway point of the tournament, but with the tournament being so stretched out and guys having matches over the stretch of this entire tournament, it's really hard to talk about a halfway point. But let me ask you this, Dylan. Up until this point, who were some of your favorite performers in this tournament so far?
The answer is clear.
Yujiro, yes.
He got Peter back, so he's the ultimate winner.
He won, yes.
Yeah, he did a satellite DDT as well. So yeah, we have to give him props for that. One of the guys I've been most entertained by, I know this may surprise you a little bit, has unquestionably been Kenta. Just purely for his backstage interviews and his shameless shilling of his book that never ceases to entertain me. I think Tanahashi has been a great player. You know, I really, you know, the match with Naito was very good. I think the match with Zach was also very good. You know, he's a guy that's gotten some wins. He feels like he's on the upswing, and that's not something I necessarily predicted. But I like what they're doing with him right now. I thought he had a good match with Hanari early on, too. So you got a lot of good things there. Yoshihashi's been a standout in-ring performer, I think, with his match with Shingo. I thought his match with Juice was very well done as well. You know, otherwise, there's a lot of guys that I think are doing good. I've enjoyed the tournament, honestly, up and down.
Yeah, me too.
But that's not, it's not like it's lighting up my match of the year ratings or even giving us big, memorable moments up and down.
I think with this G1, it really comes down to what you're expecting and what you're going in for. And I sense that a lot of fans that are critical and disappointed maybe right now went into this tournament with the expectation that we're out of the pandemic basically and the G1 is back to what it was before, but that's not the case. But if you're going into this with the expectation level that we have, that we are going to see some cool matches, it's going to be stretched out over a month, I think then you can enjoy this tournament like you are and like I am, because I think, much like you, there have been enjoyable matches, there have been great matches, there have been good matches, there's been everything basically in this tournament. Some matches that just don't belong in this tournament, one of them we're going to talk about here. But overall,
also, one thing I want to say, I forgot real quick. I want to mention this one person because I've been far from his biggest supporter over the years. But I think Taichi has been a standout player in the tournament too.
I was going to mention him.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to bring him up because I didn't want people to think I was hating on him. I really liked his tournament. I think he's been an MVP candidate so far. So I wanted to bring him up specifically because I know I'm not a big fan of his usually. But right now, hey, I'll give him credit. When he does good like this, he wrestles like this, he's done a great job. So I'm sorry for interrupting you, but
concluding my point just to say that I agree with you. I think that the tournament has been enjoyable, and there is a lot to hold on to. And now that you talked about the MVP, I would say that my MVP right now is Zack Sabre Jr. I have enjoyed his matches the most. You've talked about Kenta. Kenta and Zack was an amazing match. I really liked Zack Sabre's match with Aaron Hinare as well. And the one he recently had with Hiroshi Tanahashi on these Aichi shows was an incredible technical encounter between the two. Great moment after that. They just sat there and just congratulated each other basically for having this great match. So Zach, I really liked. Taichi was great. I also liked, he only had two matches up until now, but I thought that both matches Hiroki Goto had were great.
Yeah.
Will Ospreay also had very strong performances, best Yujiro match so far. So there is a lot of guys that have been good in this tournament.
And a really good Phantasmo match as well. Right. He's another guy I think has overachieved from what you would expect. You know, I think the effort's there in this tournament. It, you know, they might not be what it was in the old days or whatever, but I think there's a lot of guys that are trying hard, really up and down. That's one of the things that I enjoy seeing, even if the matches aren't, you know, necessarily match of the year or whatever. I like seeing guys wrestle hard with effort. Zach was a great call on your part. He's another guy that definitely deserves to be mentioned. Finlay is really having a good tournament. I really liked his match with Shingo as well. And obviously, he had that great match with Juice. Juice is another guy that's really bringing it. You know,
that is, by the way, now still my match of the tournament, the Juice and Finlay match.
Yeah, you know, and like it's up and down. I think people are delivering some of their best work. You know, it's just, like you said, maybe expectations were too high for some people. Maybe we set our expectations so low we can't be disappointed at the end of the day. But no, I genuinely think I really like the effort of everyone involved in the tournament. I don't think, you know, you could say, and even Yano, I mean, he brought up that old school Yano shtick in the Okada match, at least. He had something there. You know, Fale, I mean, these guys just aren't going to bring great matches no matter what they do. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's just not possible. But Cobb, he's another guy I think has done a good job. Like I said, you can run up and down this list of people. We haven't even mentioned Ishii yet, and he's really made the best out of his block, which I definitely thought was not a great look going into the tournament, but he's surviving. He's living up to what you would want from him. I think, you know, Shingo, we haven't mentioned him. He's another guy. Like, you could go up and down, like, the whole deal. So I've enjoyed the tournament pretty much, and I agree with everything you said, for sure. I thought you made some great points there, and I definitely agree. The guys you said should be shouted out. They definitely right up there as MVPs. Finlay and Juice, one of the best matches of the tournament, for sure. I think it's in everybody's top three, even if it's not the number one. I think I would definitely have it there. You know, I think I would go with Kenta and Zach would be my number one over that. But that, I will say, that match, the Juice and Finlay, that had the story that your Ishii's and Taichi's, or even Yoshihashi and Shingo, that was a great match as well. Those four or five, we're seeing the four and five are all kind of up there in some way, but of all of them, Finlay and Juice, that had the story, and they utilized it so well.
Yes. So let's get into these four matches off the first show, July 30th. Finlay versus Shingo Takagi. I thought this was a good match. Like you said, lots of effort put into this by both men. This, unfortunately for me, suffered a bit because it was very clear to me that Finlay basically had to win this match to remain the quote-unquote U.S. heavyweight champion that he had stolen from, or taken from Juice Robinson, I'm sorry. That took away a bit of the excitement for me in this match, but otherwise it was very well worked between the two, so I liked this match.
You put way more thought into the U.S. title than I did. Ultimately, you were proven right at the end of the day. They did put more thought into it than I would give them credit for. So, like I said, maybe my old ways, they need to change. Like, now the U.S. title, it means something once again. Through the storyline of people stealing it. Yes, that was not a great point on my part. Let's not go crazy. You are completely correct. But regardless, like I said, I didn't put any thought into that at all. Like, to be honest, I thought if they wanted to, they could easily have Shingo just take the title. It's not like Finley's going to go undefeated throughout this tournament now. Like, you know, like, he's going to have to lose this linear championship some way. Like, somehow to somebody. I mean, I love Finley. But I'm like, let's relax on that. But you know, I thought they had a good match. Honestly, I thought it was a good performance from both men. It's not, again, it wasn't as good as Shingo's match with Yoshihashi or the Juice match for Finlay. But just for a good mid-tour match, and look, we're headed these two shows, and probably the next two or three after it, they're the dog days of the G1. I think for a lot of these performers, I think we're going to see that effort dip down throughout a lot of these next few matches. But for it was a good match. You know, I would probably recommend it. You know, what would you say? Borderline recommendation. You know,
it's 7.18 on Cage Match,
and that seems pretty fair. Like, I would probably give it a 7 if I were to rate it. Yeah.
What would you give the next match? Jonah defeated Tom Lawler.
You know, Filthy Tom, you could tell that he's so ecstatic about being here in this tournament. And I think they've done a pretty decent job here. I like that they're kind of building something for him, too, just desperately trying to get that win in this
G1. He had this amazing babyface promo backstage after the match where he talked about all the losses that he's suffered throughout the years and that he will just keep on fighting. And that is exactly the fighting spirit that you would want to see in a situation like this. So great stuff by Filthy Tom, not only from the wrestling portion He also was on commentary for the second night. And I was immediately thinking, if one day Tom Lawlor decides to put his boots away, this would be the perfect role for him to be the color commentator besides Kevin Kelly.
Super charismatic guy. Like, I really think that he has, like, this is a guy who's been a fan all of his life of wrestling, and he's really, it comes through in his performances, both in the ring, in his promos, and on commentary. And I think he did a good job, you know. I know this match got rated a little bit lower, but I thought it was the right, you know, near the same level as the opener to me.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yes. Sadly, Tom Lawler's still winless at this point in time. And as much as you said, it's going to be tough for him to get another W.
Who?
For Tom Lawler.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they've got planned going forward for him, but I like that they're telling the story, at least.
Yes.
To when he does get a win, it'll be a big deal. Like, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know who they have in mind for him to be, but I do think he'll get something. Like, I just don't know who that will be.
Yeah. The next one was Zanada getting to 4 points. Great Okan still without a single win in this tournament. I don't know. This match is rated a bit higher than the Jonah versus Tom Lawler match, but this, to me, was a bunch of nothing.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm totally on your side on this one. This was, you know, I don't know what they're doing here. And Sonata, he's a guy, I thought he had a pretty decent, he's been a really up and down guy, and he's not a great performer, like just in general, but I thought he had a good match with Tai Chi. Mm-hmm. Everything else has not been as great, I would say. This is not a good performance either. Okan, I mean, he's, again, another up and down type of guy, you know, to me. And right now, it's been all down. I don't think he's had a standout performance yet. He'll get his chance against Ishii at some point. But right now, this lived up to my low expectations of it. Pretty much, you know, like, you know, a 5 out of 10 match or something mm-hmm. would be about where I would have it.
What are they doing with him? What's the plan for him?
Okan?
Yeah.
I told you before the tournament that they don't see him at that level yet.
Right. That clearly seems to be what they are thinking, but I think we've had a similar discussion when we talked about Yoshiki Nomura. They took him out of the N1 for exactly that purpose. That was your point. But Great Okan is in this tournament, and if he is, shouldn't you give him some wins? I mean, I can see him beating Ishii and Tamatonga, so that means he would finish the tournament with 4, which would be the baseline of being okay.
Yeah.
Still, though, not a good look for him right now.
To me, Inamura is a significantly, like, I like him a lot better than Okan, in my opinion. Like, Okan has a character to him that they like in New Japan. As a wrestler, I still have my doubts. Like, he's had some good matches in the past, but he's not somebody I would consider a consistent highlight of mm-hmm. a lot of their shows. And I don't think he's ready yet, to be perfectly honest with you. So, you know, to me, I know the thing is, though, this company is so stale at the top of the cards that people just want anybody to jump up. And he is the only real hope of the young guys. There are no other young guys that you can go after, pretty much, especially of a native talent. You know, who is the next ranked young person?
Yeah, we've been over this.
Exactly. Like, there's nobody. So he is the one that everyone points to. But the problem is that they don't see him at that level yet. And I don't think that's changed. I mean, they're proving that it has not changed. But perhaps, you know, it's 2 matches, 1 more loss, and he'll be gone for sure. I wonder, I don't have his schedule in front of me. I don't know who he's facing next. Like you said, maybe Ishii and Tonga.
Yeah, he's facing, actually, on the 2nd of August, the day that this is going to be released, he's facing Ishii. Then he faces Jay White on the 6th of August, and Tama Tonga on the 10th, Taichi on the 14th.
Well, what if the plan? What if he's the one they get? Because Jay's gonna have to lose some matches unless he just wins the block. Could he be that? That could be his big moment that he gets a win over Jay in what would be a main event, perhaps.
It's not a main event actually.
Oh well, then never mind. I can tell you weren't convinced.
Second from the top on that show.
Well, they don't seem.
But it's in Osaka, so. I can buy your theory about that upset.
He's going to have to lose at some point. You know, some people are going to have to beat this guy at the end of the day. And, you know, he's as good of a bet as any. And maybe if he gets that, then we can say, oh, now this was their plan for him. I don't know if that's going to, like, automatically upshoot him into a new level or anything just because he beat Jay. But, you know, it's a win over the champion. It's meaningful, like the biggest win of his career, if that were to happen. So we'll wait and see on the talk of Okada until after the Jay.
Okay, yes, we will.
Yeah. I still don't think they see him at that level, regardless of what happens, but yes.
This show then was concluded by a very good main event between Hiroshi Tanahashi and Zack Sabre Jr., adding another match to their series of great matches. Once again, this was a match that basically lived without many great bumps or many great high spots. It was a very good technical encounter. Hiroshi Tanahashi was able to reverse a lot of the stuff that Zack Sabre tried to throw at him. At one point, they had this amazing sequence where Zack Sabre did the European clutch, and the crowd bought into this as if it was the three count, and it was very close. Then he tried to armbar Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Tanahashi was able to reverse that. It was basically this entire sequence went on and led to the finish of Tanahashi then just covering Zack Sabre Jr. as he tried to go for an armbar. So that was an amazing finish. And once again, these two, they just can't have a bad match.
I thought the finish was interesting that they clearly showed Zack under the ropes, but then they tried to kind of ignore it.
Yeah.
Because Zack was already like arguing like, hey, I kicked out. But like then you had this very obvious, like, you know, reel out that they kind of didn't play up for some way. So maybe that was a little bit of a mistake there. But I thought it was a cool finish, like you said. Anyway, it was a cool match, like by far the best on this show. I liked the first two matches well enough, but this was a different level. And, you know, Tanahashi, he continues to be an excellent performer. Again, I think he meshes well with any type of wrestler, whether it's your Goto, your Naito, your Zack. You know, I think he meshes well with virtually everybody. So I would like to see what he's got, you know, left in the tank for his remaining matches. It seems like they've given him a couple of wins. Again, I didn't know what they were planning for his run in the tournament, but they're clearly keeping him alive. And I love this story of him because both of his wins have come off of flash pins. Remember, right. It's Naito, and now this one as well. So I love that they're doing something different with him. And he's the guy, like much like Goto, he is the guy that is more willing to think outside the box with his matches and not have to do the same stuff all the time. So now you get this new finish, you know, finishing stretch for Tanahashi. That's going to benefit his matches in the future, because now when he does this roll up against Evil or whoever, it's going to mean a lot more than if they had just done the high fly flow as a finish. So I love the storyline. Match was very good, you know. I wouldn't say, you know, it's right on the borderline, but probably not a top five match, but right up there in the 6-7
Yeah, right up there. And yeah. It not only benefits Tanahashi, but it also benefits Zack Sabre matches, because we've said it before with his submission win over Hinari, that they are establishing him as this guy that can win from any position. But right now, he didn't win from that position, but he lost. So that's going to be making his matches much more interesting.
I can't wait to see what he's done. I think he's had a really strong tournament so far. Like you said, that was a great shout by you earlier that he was one of the MVPs. Because when you think about his matches that he has, I think he's definitely up there.
Yeah, he definitely is. So this show, I think both of these nights, you could say, were really successful for New Japan Pro Wrestling, considering what they do now. 2,225 for the first night and 2,741 for the second night in Aichi, headlined by Tetsuya Naito defeating Evil, much like we figured. This show, Dylan, this wasn't it. This had the Yoshihashi versus Juice Robinson match, which probably no. This definitely was the best match of the of the show. Jeff Cobb versus Lance Archer, I would say, also was pretty solid, pretty good. A nice big man clash with Jeff Cobb coming out on top. That's the entire story of the match here. Jay White versus Chase Owens. Look, they probably think that they are very original and very funny. But they've done this to death. This shtick that they are going with, that one guy has to lay down for the leader of the Bullet Club for reason X. And they come up with the solution X that the guy has to lay down now. This solution that they came up with right now here was that Chase Owens was going to be paid off, but Jay White only put like two real notes into the envelope, and otherwise just I don't know, Monopoly money or anything like that. I don't know. Who cares? I don't have any time for this shit, and I was close to just skipping the match. But then, at least for some minutes of the match, they had a real wrestling match where Chase once again tried a lot. But man, this all sucked, and I don't have any time for this.
Well, I love this, Trigger. I thought
I know this is your match of the yes.
Yeah, I mean match of the year or match of the year all years. That was the question that popped into my mind when I after this match was over. But no, back to reality right now. I don't know how I can add on to anything you said. I mean, this, I don't know. You know, it sucks, and it's what I think we all kind of feared the Bullet Club stuff was gonna start to permeate through the tournament and really start to derail some things, even some good things.
Yeah, the thing about it comes down to the point that is nothing of it is original or feels in any kind of way organic.
Not at all. It's just guys having fun.
I guess that's it. Yes.
Yeah, you know, it sucks that it's in the tournament. It sucks that we're being subjected to this.
Because once again, going back to the point that you always make, this is a tournament to crown a challenger for the world championship. And you get this goofy shit.
To be fair, and now this sucked. I'm not defending it in any sort of way, but just to try to make interesting conversation, pretty much. What would we have gotten? Let's just say these two wrestled a straight match.
Mm-hmm.
That match would not have been good. You know, these two are not good wrestlers in any sense of the word. And like at the end of the day,
I would disagree that they are not good wrestlers. I would disagree with Jay White definitely that he can be a good wrestler.
I disagree,
but he's not. We've had this talking point a couple of shows ago.
Okay, well, there's no evidence that he's a good wrestler. We may pretend that he is and think that he is, but there's no, his matches never show that at the end of the day. And Chase is not a good wrestler. So at the end of the day, this match, if they had wrestled a straight match, it would not have been good.
Yeah, that is true. So maybe this was the best way to go with it. I could see a point.
It's not the best. It should have been, even if it was bad, it should have been a normal match. Like for the reasons I always say. But that may have been their thinking. Look, we know that this match is going to suck. These guys are not good workers. Nobody wants to see them wrestle a big match or any kind of singles match. So let's just do this nonsense instead.
I don't know if that's really their approach, because much like we said in prior shows, they are really behind Chase Owens to be part of this tournament. And I think he really wants to look good. And I think he really wants to have good matches with the top guys in this tournament. So I don't know.
I agree with you. Like, that's a good point. Like, I think Chase will put the effort in. You know, but it is what it is. Like, you know, it's everything you would have expected and feared, and it played out. You know, like I said, I don't want to just drone into the same stuff I always say about Jay and Chase and these guys, but because it just is what it is. I expected nothing less, and what we got was as bad as I feared it would be.
Yeah, next up we had the typical Okada versus Bad Luck Fale match. Like, they did what they always do. There was no surprise to any of this. Okada, much like he always does, is just able to lift up Bad Luck Fale like he's nothing, and they always pretend like it's some sort of crazy strength that he has, but he always does that, and Bad Luck Fale basically is lifted up by anyone in this tournament, so there is no specialness to that at all. This match has a rating of 4.62, and I feel bad for this, because I mean, this match was not that bad, I thought, but it wasn't much better either. So, yeah, I would probably land between 5 and 6.
To me, this was an absolute nothing match. When was the last time they had a singles match? Probably 3 years ago, 2019.
Yeah, he hasn't been in the tournament but like yeah. for the last couple of years. So probably 2019, yeah.
I mean, so
I'm just going to check here.
Yeah, we're going to go on and give us the facts here. I don't want to be incorrect, or you can correct me as well. I appreciate, I like being wrong, because then it gives me a chance to be right.
2019, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so 2019, as I said. So they haven't wrestled in about 3 years. And maybe Okada just missed it. You know, he was like, I miss wrestling Fale. That's my big guy opponent. I can slam him. I can look good against him. And we can have our same match that we had back all then. So, yes, the same they always do. But maybe there's some fans who just jumped into the New Japan, you know, in the last 3 years. Some new fans that never saw it before. And maybe they just sort of like, look, we want to remind the new fans what we used to do back in the old days with our very mediocre.
Wow, you're putting a lot of thinking behind this
match. I mean, it was... Again, I expected nothing, and that's what I got. So I it's not like I have any strong thoughts about it, just like the other match. I'm just trying to make interesting conversation about it. A very boring match. To me, a 3 or a 4 out of 10 at best. It would be about where I would rate this.
Where do you land for the main event?
I don't... People always give these matches good ratings.
Crazy, right?
That's one of the weirdest... things. I mean, listen, Naito, I always say this, we saw it with Omega too when he was in New Japan. The fans are very loyal to Naito and Omega. But this was not a good match. Like, however you want to shake it out, this to me was not a very good match. And, you know, again, I hate to be repetitive, but I came in expecting this match was not going to be good. And that's what we got. I mean, right away, you know...
Yeah, we got the exact match that we probably thought we were going to get. There was a lot of shenanigans by Dick Togo. There was tables, chairs. They did their usual spots. It was exactly what you could expect. And it had the
Togo
exact outcome. I said it, but Dick was there. It had the exact outcome that anyone predicted that this would have. So, yeah.
They went to the barricades again. That's a very popular spot in New Japan these days. You did the baseball swing spot with the chair. You know, they had that tease to count out type of deal there. You know, so you did that stuff. Evil got another shot. They did another spot, too, where the ref, Red Shoes, like, Naito hit a chair shot, and Red Shoes was like, I don't know what happened.
That was so... man.
I will repeat my reiteration from earlier. And Naito's a little better than these other guys. But, I mean, he hasn't really shown that. I said it in the other matches. I mean, you like the other matches, and I like the other matches well enough. But I don't think he's hit that gear, like that top guy type of gear that Tanahashi or your Zacks had. I think he's been missing something throughout this tournament. Even though he's had good matches up to this point, I didn't sense a big deal here. But, again, much like the other match, when you see this match on paper, if they even tried to have a regular match, it wouldn't be great. It would be better. I mean, like, it would be hard to be worse.
We've seen it when they tried to have regular matches that they don't have good chemistry.
Yeah. These guys are what they are. So, like, they're going to do what they feel like they should do. I don't think the fans are into this at all, either. Like, especially the local fans, like the ones that go to the shows. I've never gotten any sense of overness from Evil in this situation, unless you have a really hot baby face. Like, same deal with Jay. You need the right person in here. And this match was so obvious that Naito was going to win on top of it that there wasn't even any drama, really. Like, a lot of stupid stuff. You have to totally turn off your brain to enjoy this, I feel like. And even then, there's nothing to enjoy, in my opinion. I think this was just bad stuff. And maybe people liked it because they're into Naito, and that's great. There's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. If you're a fan, I've always said it, if you're a fan, you don't have to be unbiased. Like, you should vote for all your favorites. But for me, I did not see anything in this match. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. So this sounds like we're not really high on this tournament, but like we said before, like we enjoy this. But this show was just not it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The
show before, I thought, was much better. Had much better matches. And we're going to Osaka on the next weekend, where there is going to be Yoshi-Hashi versus El Fantasmo, Toru Yano versus Lance Archer, Hiroki Goto versus Zack Sabre, Great Okan versus Jay White, Shingo Takagi versus Will Ospreay for the first day of action. Then on the second day, Hinari versus Evil, Tom Lawler versus Bad Luck Fale, Juice Robinson versus El Fantasmo, Tomohiro Ishii versus Chase Owens, and Katsushika Okada versus Jonah. So there are some matches that could potentially be very good. So I'm looking forward to this Osaka weekend, because this usually is the time of the G1 in Osaka where everybody really tries to work very hard and tries to have the best matches of the tournament.
And we hope that that happens. Like I said, we're in a tough spot in terms of the timing of the days, but it's going to be interesting. And here's another thing, I think a big problem with this tournament. Well, again, I mentioned him earlier. Like you mentioned him, and this is who I thought of. Fantasmo. He hasn't wrestled. He's not going to have wrestled in like a week by the time his next match happens. And it's not just him, but it's for a lot of people, like with how the schedule's played out. And I think that's making it very hard to follow, especially if you are the type of person that's maybe a fan of one or two guys, like really big fans. What do you have to look forward to on these five shows in between your, you know, so-and-so's next match there that you could say? And I think that's something that's really harmed the perception of the tournament. People can't get attached back-to-back-to-back of storylines. I think by the end of the tournament, people will be back into it because we'll see how everything played out. And the last 3 days are all back-to-back, and they'll have everything laid out in front of you. But right now, you're not getting this follow things along night by night by night like you used to in past years. Now you have to wait 3, 4, 5 shows for the next chapter in so-and-so's story. And I think that's hurt a lot of the fans as well. And I think that's a big problem. If they scheduled the shows a little bit better or more, you know, more consistently, I would say, I think they could have avoided a lot of this. But, it is what it is. And I think that's hurt the perception of it a lot.
I agree. I don't really have anything to add to that other than that is pretty much what we're going to have to live with, because I don't think that they're backing away from this approach of this tournament.
And I don't even think it's I don't think it's that bad. I just think that it's different, you know, than what it used to be. And I think that's, and like I said, we have to wait and see to the end of the tournament how people react to it after we've seen the entire stories played out. And then you could say, it'll feel like you have followed so-and-so's whole story by the end. It just right now it doesn't, because it's so mismatched. So it's just different. I don't think it's terrible. It doesn't bother me because I like the shows. I just don't like this latest show because it was bad. But like you said, the show before was very good, so it doesn't bother me, but I can see why it might affect others more.
Right. That is ultimately, I guess, what we can say about that. Yeah, I guess that's it. Do you have anything else to add, Dylan?
Well, I just hope that everybody's had fun with a lot of the stuff that's been going on.
Right.
It was a really busy weekend in terms of a lot of different wrestling companies. Next month, we're going to have some big things coming up too. We got the Odo tournament starting.
This month, actually. It's already off.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Totally right on that point. But yeah, you've got the Odo tournament coming up. You got Peter Pan coming up. That's going to be a big deal. G1 finals coming up. Princess Cup. Like, you're getting a lot of different things coming up. August is going to be a big month for Japanese pro wrestling. And as we turn the page into this next month, I cannot wait to see where we go in all of this. And hopefully we have some more good stuff. Because, there was some stuff to be down on, but there was some good stuff too that we have. And I can't wait to see where everything plays out one way or the other. And most importantly, being on here with you to talk about it with everybody else and give our takes and our reactions and have a lot of fun all throughout.
Can't wait for Kento Miyahara to become a voodoo murderer. It's going to be my highlight of the month.
I don't want to speak that into existence right now, so I don't even want to joke about it. Okay.
You know it's happening.
And Taru's got that mystical crap he was doing in 01 at the end. So he might be listening right now. He might have some kind of, he's using your words to make this happen. And I think if that happens, you are going to be the one I point the finger at now.
I'm taking the blame for that.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's very brave of you. It's, I agree that is brave, but we'll have to see. Maybe it won't happen. Maybe I'm trying to talk it down right now. So I need the power. Kento Miyahara, I need him to listen. I need him to hear this. I need him to go and fire up and say, no, I am not joining the Voodoo Murders. I have to continue my role as the ace of the company, and I will not get sucked down into what I did before 10 years ago. And so I will have to take a new way. He needs, and that's what life's about, Strigger. Life is about growth. Let this man grow from where he was 10 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I ultimately agree. But still, though, this chaos is going to happen.
I apologize for getting loud. But I got passionate over this.
I can hear that. Clearly.
This is voodoo murders right now we're talking about. The thing we're almost passionate about, positively or negatively, I would say. But it's going to be interesting. We will be on to talk about it, and we may have a lot to talk about if things play out.
You mean you're not interested in the discount version of the Bullet Club?
They were the OG Bullet Club. Yeah, they were far before the Bullet Club, my friend.
Yes, they were, but now look at them.
I don't even want to say seen better days, because that's not really true either. But they have seen other days.
Other days, yes.
They've seen other, there were other days, and the better days were when they were not around, were the better days. But regardless, we will talk about this. I promise we will have our reactions, and it's going to be interesting. One way or the other, we're going to have to face the music. One way or the other, what happens there?
Yes. We, Dylan, the two of us, much like the listeners, we will also see other days. So I hope you enjoyed this show. Hope you enjoyed listening. Thank you for listening. This has been the Eastern Lariat, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.